I mean, that's the thing that happened recently when there was like, I think it was 30 ODs in 2 days.
Yeah.
And because there was, and what it was is,
30.
People thought it was heroin, but it was a powdered fentanyl that was going around, and it was hitting people really, really hard. So you don't really know what you have, and you don't know what it's been cut with or stepped on with, and...
golly, you don't even know what you're taking.
Yeah, I mean, people talk about, like, pig dewormer and shit, like crazy fucked up shit. I mean, crystal is already, like, really fucking bad for you.
But there's nothing quite as sad as sleeping rough, just looking for relief. Feeling all washed up on Hastings Street. Feeling all washed up on Hastings Street. Oh no.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It is a good one today. Sorry I'm late, but I was doing stuff. I'm working too much, you guys. So much editing. Promotion stuff. My special comes out January 16th at 11:59 p.m. It's called Paid Regular and a Shout-Out at the Comedy Store, and it's my dream. Please tune in. I have finished the extended cut. It's about, I forgot, 69 or 70 minutes. It'll be available on cc.com. It'll also be available on my website, arithegreat.com, for $5. And you can see it on Comedy Central January 16th at 11:59 p.m. and on video on demand, like right after that, I think. But that's the 44-minute version. So either one. If you need to upload one onto Torrent, please do the unedited version. Because why not include it all? It's all going to be stolen, so fucking steal it all. And then my storyteller show right after that, January 22nd. On after at midnight. It's really 23rd in the morning, I think, but whatever. Thursday nights after at midnight will be for 8 straight weeks. So we got to go. All right, whatever. Nothing. Here's this topic today. It's a good one. It's a very good one. I'm going to talk. Do you guys remember the Donovan episode, the Donovan podcast? It was Donovan P. And it was episode 115. It was heroin. It was all about heroin on Hastings Street in Vancouver. It was a really good episode. 115. You should download it. Almost 3 hours. Yeah, he just gave a real good firsthand account of Hastings Street is the area in Vancouver where all the junkies go. You should listen to that episode. It was a really good episode. And they all sort of go up there, and there's a safe injection place called Insight. And Insight, they sort of, or from what I understand, is they, you go there, you tell them what you have that you're taking, cops don't bother you, and there's nurses on duty, and you say, hey, I'm taking this. And if you overdose, they can look at your forms and see what you're shooting up, and they can apply the antidote or like give you the treatment you need based on now they know what drug it is. Or if they see you going into shock, they can, you know, call an ambulance. I don't really know how it works, but it's a safe injection place where you can't. And they give you needles. They give out needles. So no one has to reuse needles and have to spread AIDS. And he talked about the life on the street, going to Insight sometimes for help, and then just being on the street, stealing, living off ice cream. It's pretty surprisingly funny for such a dark topic, but actually not that surprisingly. It's pretty funny, heroin, but it's also dark. So that was the last time I was in Vancouver. I got that interview, and this time I managed to locate, through the help of Donovan, actually, who's doing great now, by the way, just got married. He's having a great time. I heard he got hit by like a truck and then like got injured, but like used a settlement to open up a yoga studio. I was too busy. I couldn't meet anybody. I didn't say hi to him. I didn't go over and see him. But all this editing. I go to the cities and people are like, oh, what are you going to do? You're going to go to the mountains when you're in Utah? I'm like, no, I'm just going to stay in my hotel and look at fucking stories I've seen 1,000 times. But stare intently at it so I can see if any angle has been changed without me knowing about it. Anyway, so this time I got a member of someone who works at Insight to come talk about the thing over there. So I got one of the nurses, and I find out really what it's all about. I wanted to go down and see it, did not. I'm going to go next time. But it's hard to track one of them down and do this interview, but this guy Morgan Black was cool enough. He's been working there for a while, and he was cool enough to do it, and he's great. He's great. You guys will love it. Real open and honest and a cool, normal guy. Fucking doesn't seem like he'd be into it at all, like that kind of thing. He's just got he's tatted up. He seems like either he wouldn't be into helping any of those people, or he would have been a former junkie. But neither is the case. So anyway, I went to London, you guys. Some last minute fucking, you know, some nothing job popped up. So I flew to London to do a promo video for some movie. The Kingsman. Fucking Colin Firth is playing an action star. They're letting him play an action star. And he has like really good moves. They're pretty fucking decent. He plays like a spy. An English spy. So they sent, like, they had money in there. This is what they had. Hollywood just has these scam jobs. That's what I mean by nothing job. It was a fun job. But they just have these fucking scam jobs where they have extra money in their budget. And so they're like, I think in order to justify having it, they're like, let's use it. So they're like, how about we send a comedian to spy school to see how he does? And then we use that as a promo video for the movie. Yeah, sounds good, someone says in a board meeting. I don't care, I'm hungry and I want to go to lunch, so sure, whatever. And then they call me and I get some money and a fucking first class trip to London for 2 days. And I stayed an extra day. They paid for the extra day at the Soho Hotel, which is such a coolest fucking hotel in the middle of Soho. Happening like East Village type area. Nah, you know what? It's not like the East Village type. It's more like, it's not East Village type. No, it is. And then Williamsburg or Bushwick is more like where I stayed last time. Shoreditch. Anyway, whatever. I don't know what I'm talking about. That's why I even mention it. But here's why I mention it. So I went to London. It was fucking great. When I landed, I told you last week, I fucking freaked out like a goddamn rookie and threw away my edibles so I didn't have anything. I got the craziest dreams. I started getting the crazy dreams. So I took a little bit of on the plane, like inside my belly, I took a little bit of some Los Gumis Hermanos peanut brittle or toffee, whatever they have, whatever it's called. I never remember the difference. And that got me halfway into London. And then, you know, I had whatever was left over. They're supposed to be taking in for the ride back 10 hours because they're going straight to Phoenix to open up for Rogan in a great show. Oh, my God, the Celebrity Theater. In London, it was fucking, in Phoenix, it was so cool. And it's theater in the round, but everyone's really close. So I was pacing back and forth like I never do. God, Tony Hinchcliffe and Rogan, everybody killed. It was fucking great. Anyway, but I freaked out and dumped my shit at the airport before I went through customs. No one was checking, no dogs, could have easily gotten away with it. So I had nothing on there on the way back. So then I had to I was just napped that day as soon as I landed because I hadn't slept all day. Then we had to go see this movie and then I went back and then I had to make this podcast. So I barely had time to nap. Then we had to go watch the movie, The Kingsman, which was pretty good, you guys. They fucking, the really good fucking fight scenes. Cool plot. Not perfect. Nothing's perfect, but it was pretty fucking good. I liked it. And I wasn't watching it with a friend or anything, but I was like, this is pretty fucking cool and exciting. And so then it was great, whatever. Then I stayed an extra day at the Soho Hotel and I did spots in London. I was like, let me get some spots. And my manager got me a couple spots. And the first spot, 2 in a night on Wednesday. And I was tired. Granted, I was tired. But I bombed harder than I have maybe in 2 or 3 years. Like easily in 2 years. I will only say definitely not more because I can't remember specific time. But I mean, it might have been 5, 6 years since I've bombed that hard. Oh my God. They were just staring at me. And it wasn't even like, and all these comics, my manager was like, oh, you know, maybe it's just not the right environment. No. Don't excuse it. Just go, what happened? What'd you do wrong? That's what Rogan said. He's smart. He understands like a comic. What'd you do wrong is the right way to respond to that. Oh no. What happened? What'd you do wrong? Yeah, because something must have gone wrong for a legitimate comic who knows what he's doing to go that far south. And it wasn't like it was a rowdy English crowd, like, oh, they're yelling and screaming, no one's listening from the start. Mm-mm. Wasn't like that. That's not like a real bomb. That's just you guys not giving the comic a chance. They were silent. It was a civil servants association. So like government accountants and people that work in the offices of the mail service and like civil servants. Them and their family, they had this like club that they go to, this like, you know, Shriners Club type of thing, but for civil servants. And they had a Christmas dinner, and then they went. So it's like eight different groups at long tables, and they finish their meal, and they're kind of vegging out. It's another reason not to serve food at fucking comedy clubs. When you finish digesting, you're just like, oh, you can't even think of anything. You just lay there. Your mind doesn't even work. And I mean, I started and just got nothing. And then one guy starts scoring off me. He started fucking scoring off me. I did a joke about like touching a dick or. And then he's like, oh, sounds like Phil. Sounds like Phil over there. I also went to elocution school. So I had to go to spy school. I went to elocution school too. Didn't take. Sounds like Phil over there. And they're all like, ah, ha, ha, they're all laughing. And I couldn't even blame him. He wasn't getting in my way. I was like, thanks, though at least I know the crowd's capable of a laugh. I tried to play off it. I was like, oh, it's Phil the fucking wanker. I didn't say that, but, and I mean, I'm sweating. And I'm like, the only laughs I'm getting is by savers going like, oh, you guys are just not feeling this at all. I got a couple chuckles. Another comic was like, oh, you know, they didn't laugh at the first comic much either. I was like, shut up, man. Don't try to fucking make me feel better. The MC got in my head a little bit, but I'm too good to let him do that. He goes, you know, try not to probably talk to them because it just, you know, they're all sort of separate. So just kind of because the guy on the left's giving me trouble. The guy was scoring off me. Wasn't giving trouble. Just being a little rowdy. It's good. So he was like, you know, probably just do straight. So I just went straight to my act. In fact, they can't understand my accent. It takes a second to adjust. And also I'm probably mumbling. And I'm darker than they're probably used to. Different style of comedy than they're used to. I should have done crowd work. I should have done 3 minutes of crowd work. Get them on my side, then go. But I was really trying to work on my material too. So it wasn't like it was his fault. It was just bomb. And I'm telling you, it never gets easier. In 15 years of comedy, it never gets easier. That's not true. It got a little easier. I mean, I felt shitty. The feeling was just as bad. The only thing that got better is I didn't consider quitting. I didn't start second-guessing my career choice. You know? That's what I used to do. You get off stage after a bomb, and you're at home at night just thinking, like, what am I doing? I mean, what am I doing? They all came. This crowd came to laugh. They came to a comedy club because they wanted to laugh. So it wasn't like, oh, this crowd doesn't want to laugh. They came to a comedy club because they wanted to laugh. Or in this case, a comedy show because they wanted to laugh. And it wasn't a page. I wasn't getting paid for it. So it wasn't like I fucked anybody over. Just myself. And these people came to, and I came prepared to make someone laugh. Not just like, oh, I'm being funny, but, you know, stuff's got to hit you right. Like, I prepared ahead of time to make someone laugh. And who did I get to make laugh? People who came to laugh. It's the perfect storm for a laugh. There's no way you can't get a laugh in that situation. And then what does it result in? The opposite of a laugh. A fucking staring contest. I mean, I went into old material from the special that I didn't have to do. Doing a 10-minute set. Just trying to pull myself out. Nothing's working. My stuff's long, too. If I start going on a path, it doesn't work. It ain't a fucking 20-second joke. It's 2 minutes of thunderous silence. Fucking Paul over there scoring off me left and right. Other tables are laughing at him. It's not like they're not capable of laughing. Paul's buddies laugh. Make it. Oh. By the way, I'll be in Montreal on Thursday. December 18th. Get tickets. 8 and 10 o'clock. Theater St. Catherine. It's in the French part of town. Where all the heroin is. Perfect. Perfect tie-in. I was sweating. I was sweating. I got off stage. Other comics talking. I couldn't even understand what he was saying. He's like, oh, yeah. Thank God I had another set that night. I could not have taken a 10-hour flight. There's no way I'm taking a 10-and-a-half-hour flight with that sitting on me. I would have opened up the emergency hatch. I would have said, fuck it. You're all coming down with me. Let's Indian Airlines this shit. Yeah. Anyway, I did another set at Top Secret Comedy. Martin was cool enough to put me on late notice. And that place is great. Top Secret Comedy is great. Cool young people that get comedy. I love that place. And it's so I had one set. I was like, all right, fine, this is good. And it went well. Whew. They were also all older and they were conservative at the other place, at that fucking civil servants place. They were average age of like 45, 40, and conservative people. Comedy club, average age 27, and fucking fun, cool, hip people that are out doing fun shit on a Monday night, Wednesday night. So at least I got a recovery set, so I don't have to sit with it, and then we'll go straight to Phoenix and do another set. But man, even later that night, walking home from Top Secret Comedy, I was still sweating. Thinking about it, I was still sweating. It never gets easier to bomb everybody. Never. I mean, days later. Think about it. God, it just feels awful. All right, let's start the episode. Whew. So, by the way, the 3D shirt is now available for pre-order. You got to get it in the next like 3 days. The shipments are being done on the 19th, on Friday. So there's a 3D shirt, everybody. It's $25 and it comes with two pairs of 3D glasses. We added colors because the colors on the gray, so I saw the prototype. The colors on the gray, they looked awesome. But when you put the 3D glasses on, the 3D was only like so-so 3D. If you looked at it for a while, it was pretty good, but it didn't like jump out at you right away. You could tell it was 3D, but the graphics looked pretty good without the 3D glasses. And I was like, no, this isn't good. And we figured out why. It might be because the blue of the 3D is blending in with the gray. So I was like, fuck it. Let's get yellow and white in there too. And the yellow and white, the design without the glasses on does not look quite as good. It looks pretty damn good. And that's the prototype I showed Matt Edgar, where he's like, oh, that's a cool shirt. And then he put the glass, but when they put the 3D glass on, it fucking pops out. So trade off, whatever you guys want. The gray looks better without glasses on, but not quite as 3D with the glasses on. And the white and yellow don't look as good with the glasses off, but fucking pop the fuck out when you're on the 3D glasses. So go to my website, arithegreat.com, the merch page. You'll see it there. And if you pre-order in the next 3 days, you get a free, those 2012 shirt designs, get that on a poster, on a hard poster, 8x12, I think. And there's also a 3D poster, a big one that you can hang up on your wall for acid trips. Seem like the perfect thing to have up on your wall for the very end of a mushroom trip before you jerk off and while you're still kind of going through waves. So yeah, come to Montreal this Thursday. Theater St. Catherine. The tickets are on my website, arithegreat.com. As will be all the information on the website and a place where you can send a donation if you'd like to Insight. I suggest some socks. You will see why when you listen to this episode. That's it, right? And I have the first full weekend of January of San Francisco at Punchline Comedy Club. Excited about my middle act, my feature act, who's actually a headliner there. But since he's from there, he's agreed to middle for me. So it's going to be a great show. And he's been on this podcast before, Louis Katz. So that'll be fucking rad. And then my stuff airs very soon, 16th and 22nd. So set your DVRs, I guess, right now. January 16th for 11:59 p.m. My special, Passive Aggressive. Nope, my special, Paid Regular, comes out. And they're airing my old special, Passive Aggressive, on at the end of the run of the Storyteller show. This is not happening. So anyway, let's start the episode. Jesus Christ, 20 minutes. Check the website anyway. Not only for information on Insight and a fun clip from Jim Carrey that we bring up, but also that I have to find right now and then build a website. I'm so tired. But also for the music that I use every week, I show who it is and I give you a link to a video of that music. So if you ever wanted to know, go to the website and find out. And episode 200 coming with Jeff Danis and Ryan O'Neill. Danis and O'Neill, episode 200 at the first week of the new year. So that's it. And my next Storyteller show, my next live, This Is Not Happening, is going to be happening at Riot Fest in LA, January 17th. No lineup yet. I think we're going to do either revenge stories or breakup stories. If you guys have an idea for a good topic, send them to me. Contact@arithegreat.com. All my contact information is on my website. And so will all the information for Insight be on my website as well. So here we go. Let's start the episode. Thank you, Morgan Black, for coming down to my hotel room in Vancouver to do this. It's a good hotel room for that. Vancouver hotel room they put you up at is nice, and you get the good view of the fucking mountains and stuff. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, episode 197. It's all about Insight and the work that people do there. It's fucking, it's a good episode, and I'm glad I did it. Glad we got it done. Episode 197, Injection Protection. Right fucking bomb-ass title. Injection Protection with Morgan Black starts now.
Help me if you can, I'm feeling down. And I do appreciate you being around. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please help me?
Let's start talking. Where'd you go before this? Across the street to some place?
Yeah, I went across the street. And they were treating me like I was trying to rob the joint or something.
Really?
Yeah. They kept going like,
they look at you with all the tattoos and shit, and they're like, yeah. What are you doing here?
Yeah, exactly.
A little closer.
Yeah,
okay. There you go. Right. Then you're fine. Oh, and then that's the other thing. When you turn to look outside, it'll kind of go like that.
Yeah, okay.
And then, but that's fine. You'll be fine. Thanks for doing this.
Of course.
Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Did they give you permission or anything, or was it hard? How do you know Donovan from there?
I do know Donovan from there, yeah.
Okay, he's cool. He's like a character, huh?
Yeah, he is. He's larger than life, that guy.
Yeah, I heard he just like got hit by a car and like pretty much is okay, so he won the lottery.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I didn't even know that happened, but I wouldn't surprise
He got this
me.
Settlement, I heard. Now he's opened up a bunch of yoga places.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
And he got married. He met some girl and got married in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
That guy's great. Everything that happens to him now, because he's sober, he's like, it's all a gift.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, and like he really believes it.
But it's all more epic than, I feel like it's more epic than your average person's, what? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's the kind of stuff that he gets into and...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He tries taking pictures and he's like, all right.
Yeah, I'll give this a shot. Ends up being fucking phenomenal.
Great. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that guy's cool. I'm glad I met him. How long have you been over there at Insight?
Insight, about three and a half years now.
Okay, how did that place start? I don't understand how that place started. It's not government, right?
No, it started super grassroots. The thing of it is I don't know a hell of a lot about it. I'm not interested in the politics for the most part.
Yeah.
But from what I gather, it started from like super grassroots. Like they basically saw a need and they're like, people need clean supplies. So they just like set up a table, put supplies on it.
Really?
Then the cops would come by and be like, you can't do that here. And they would break the table down, you know what I mean? Have to move it along. And they would do just that. I think
they would just keep going from spot to spot.
Yeah. Or they would just bring it back to the same place, set it up again and start again. And they were adamant about it to the point where the cops finally said like, if you're going to do this, you need a place, you need a building. So they tried renting a little place and just giving out needles like that.
Oh, so everyone's just gathering on that corner where they set up a table?
Yeah. From what I've heard.
I wonder if people like avoided it. When I see a guy like in a, not a nice suit, but however they were dressed, like with the table set up, like what's going on here?
Yeah, what's the deal?
What's
free
this?
What?
Free needles, why? Wait, where else do you get needles if you're on the street?
That's the thing, right? Exactly. That was part of the problem.
You can't buy a needle at 7-Eleven.
Nope.
Where can you buy it? You have to steal them from a hospital.
You have to steal them from a hospital, or you get them, you lie and say you have diabetes, or I'm not really sure.
To who?
To pharmacists? I don't know.
The weird thing about addiction is that it will educate you on things that don't really involve the actual drug.
Yeah.
You're like, well, who pharmacist? Okay, what do I have to say? I just have, like, who teaches them? So, like, the older heroin addicts go like, yeah, son, if you're going to be in this life.
Totally. They're gurus, too. Like, they know about pharmaceuticals like it's a science.
Really?
I mean? Oh, yeah. Yeah, they'll school you big time. I don't know any of that shit.
Pharmaceuticals. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's the big thing, right? A lot of people don't realize that. They think that, like, well, they think many things about insight. They think that we give out drugs.
You don't give out drugs.
Know? No, hell no. People bring their own, you know, BYOD kind of stuff.
You should have a sign like that.
Yeah, totally.
Above it, BYOD.
Yeah, but, I mean, people start mashing up their pharmaceuticals and mainlining them. So it's like it's become kind of a different
thing.
Like
the Oxy?
Yeah.
They said Oxy's like heroin. Is that
they call
what
it
that means?
So you can like heroin.
But that means you can mash it up and shoot it?
Oh, yeah. You can shoot anything. People come in all the time and they're like, can I shoot this? It's like, you can. You can shoot anything you want.
Are you ever like, from what I know, you're not going to get a good high off that? You should just eat it or snort it?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I wonder.
I mean, well, no, not
you
with...
You can't shoot up like weed.
Oxys, you can.
You can?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I had a friend who was like super into Oxy. Had to go to rehab.
Yeah. Yeah, most people take them orally, but no, you can smash them.
Yeah. She used to smash them up and then eat them or snort them to get them to hit harder.
Yeah. We don't do... Insight doesn't do... Like, we don't... It's kind of funny. We don't allow people to, like, snort cocaine.
You don't.
But you can mainline it.
Just shooting.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny. It's like, dude, you can't do that here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of funny.
Hey, we have some rules. Yeah. I went to this place in Denmark called Christiania. It's just this town inside Copenhagen.
Yeah.
And it's just like autonomous. It's an anarchist town.
Yeah.
And they sell weed. They sell hash. But they say no hard drugs.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And I'm like, what's mushrooms? And they're like, borderline. And I'm like, all right. Well, I think it should be not hard drugs, but all right.
Yeah.
How do you get a job there? At Insight. Is it a job or is it volunteer?
No, it's a job.
Okay.
Yeah. I got it word of mouth. Basically, I had a friend, Laura Ellison, who used to work there. I was in Portland at the time, and she was like, you have to come work at Insight. Like, you'd be a shoo-in.
Really?
Yeah. She kept pushing the matter, and I kept being like, I'm not really, I've never been.
Why? What were you doing before?
Working under the table in the States.
But as, like, as what?
Doing absolutely anything I could to survive.
Okay.
Yeah. I worked with, I volunteered with homeless communities out there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Were you ever a user?
Never, ever.
Wow, you look like one.
I know. This is the thing.
Everyone, the big ear spacers and all the tats on their hand.
I have no reason to lie about it, but I...
Oh, yeah, no.
It's hilarious because, like... A lot of the participants at Insight are like really intelligent.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't fool them for anything. But the one area where they will not believe me is about my like drug history.
Your past?
Yeah, and I don't have one.
That's hilarious.
And they're like, yeah, right, dude. Yeah, right. When did you get clean? Like,
it's the hand tattoos and the neck tattoos. Those are two signs of like, you don't care about society.
Right, exactly. And
that usually goes hand in hand with like, here's some drugs.
Totally,
want them?
Totally.
Yeah. Do they pay good? Insight.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not great either for what you, I mean, I'm grateful big time.
It's not like the clients pay.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like they got a lot of money coming in here. Move the mic a little like over towards me because you keep turning towards me. Yeah. Or use the other hand maybe. I don't know. That might work.
All right.
I never get these until afterwards and I listen to them. Every once in a while they're like, you can hear people like,
walking down the street.
Yeah. Generally it's fine. Yeah, these people don't pay at all. How okay. All right. So let me just ask you the process first. So somebody comes in, I'm a heroin addict.
Okay.
Or a first time heroin user and I want to do it safely. Do you ever get that?
Yeah.
People who are like, I want to do heroin, I don't know how to do this, but I don't want to OD, so yep. I feel like this is the place to go.
Definitely. Yeah, we get that all the time. We screen people. So there's a bit of a process when a person comes in. We're already assessing the person just based on like everything from how they look to how they act to like their eyes. Like we're picking up everything we can because we want to make a really informed choices to help people. So we're like, before the process even gets going.
Yeah.
We're trying to be as discerning as we can about the type of person they are, the type of user that they are.
And what does that do? What does that help you with?
Well, just to give us a better idea of where they're coming from and what their ultimate needs are, because we have everyone come through that place. Like, it's not just an entrenched user that comes through there.
Uh-huh.
It's like business dudes and like all sorts, rock stars, you know, the whole deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not like one form of typical user.
Right.
We do have that, but.
So how would your care? What do you call what you'd give people? Your service? I don't know.
Yeah.
How would your care change if it's just some like well-to-do rock star who's just doing it safely versus a tweaker?
Well, everyone who comes in has a bit of a story. Some people are, they sort of get it. They've done it enough times. They know what they're up to. They know the story. They've been through the whole nine. So you don't really have to tell them much. You know what I mean? They know to just do their thing. Other people are people that have sort of, maybe they used to be snorting drugs.
Yeah.
Or like you said, maybe it's like a curiosity for them or something like this. Or they've just sort of found themselves in a position where maybe one of their partners has been using. And so their partner doctored them a couple times. That happens.
What do you mean?
Like actually injected drugs into their arm.
Whoa.
Like, yeah, get this, try this.
And then they're like, I don't want it. And they just shoot them. They just get them with it as they're passing by.
I don't know how it goes. I'm just saying that I know that for a lot of people, it's not just like they don't just wake up and go like, this is something I want to do. They find themselves in that position.
Oh yeah.
And then it slowly starts becoming something that's like out of their hands.
Oh right. So you assess them to see what would you do different based on the different type of people they are?
Well, because some people are like, they're how they sort of respond socially is uh-huh. tricky. So a lot of people are really quiet, cagey. They're shy. They're nervous.
Okay, so
and they're bashful about their addiction in general. You know what I mean? Like,
so they don't want to tell you what they're doing.
Yeah, they're scared, and they have to trust us. Like, they don't know exactly what the service entails. They don't know if their personal information is going somewhere.
Yeah,
you know, if they get a little bit paranoid, as you would on drugs.
And oh yeah,
you know what I mean. So they're like, they have to sort of like suss us out too.
Yeah. There's this thing in Los Angeles. We've had the dispensaries for a long time for weed, and all these people. I mean, most people don't care, but some people are like, I don't want to be on a list. They put me on a list, and the government's going to take away my health insurance.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, it's not a. It's just a list of like people who have been recommended marijuana. You didn't do anything.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
You know, and they don't share it with anybody. And what are they going to arrest? Fucking 250,000 people all at once? They're going to round them up?
Yeah, they might try.
Yeah, but people. Yeah, they might. It's the thing with the government. Like, you just can't trust them. Yeah. They're just full of lies for so long. They're like, I don't know. You say this, but you say a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah.
If you have any stories about this, by the way, to illustrate any of these things, just feel free.
Sure.
Like, I mean, don't tell me their names, I guess. like, what's the most famous person that's gone down there? So, like, are some people okay? So, like, when I go to a doctor,
yeah,
I've just started being honest with my doctor,
yeah,
and realizing like, oh, I don't need. There's no benefit of lying to him.
Yeah.
So, like, when they ask me like, do you smoke? And I always be like, no.
Yeah.
And they're like, why don't I just tell them what I do? He's trying to give me help.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Like, he needs the information.
But no, see, that's perfect because it's this, we do the same thing when we go across the border. We're like, you know, when they say like, have you ever smoked pot before? Probably I would say, I don't know what the stats are, but like probably like 90% of people have at least tried pot.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So then you're in this position already where your like integrity is sort of on the line, and all you want to do is like go down to the States to visit your buddy.
Oh, yeah, they ask you if you smoke pot.
Yeah, they ask you if you smoke pot, and then you're already in a position where you're like, do I lie?
Yeah.
Trust.
Yeah, they make you lie about it.
They make you lie, yeah.
Different. It's not always the doctors or whatever, but it's like someone's making you lie about it.
Yeah.
Even your parents, whatever it is.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm coming from Vancouver and going to Portland.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, exactly.
Can I use your best judgment if I've ever smoked pot before, as it's like coming out of your ears. Do you guys that work there, are you guys super sober or not as much?
I think that every person that's down there, there's a tie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a thread down there somewhere. So it's like it's in their family,
yeah,
or it's them themselves, or it's been close with them.
Family, yeah. I bet there's a lot of that.
There's probably a lot of that.
People see it. They see somebody OD, like an uncle or something, and they're like, if he had gotten...
Yeah, or alcoholism or any of those, you know, addictions in general. I mean... I feel like the whole world's addicted on some level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whether it's to computers and technology or coffee
or Jesus.
Or Jesus.
Technology's a bad one, dude. I'm thinking of getting off my data plan and the phone all the time.
Yeah.
I see it on elevators too. Like, as soon as the door closes, everyone takes out the phone and like vanishes.
Totally.
It's a problem. I moved to New York and I see that too. Everyone walked down the street. Me too. Like, I walk down the street, I'm typing my phone, and then I'm like, I've just missed 10 blocks of the most exciting city in the world. Just not looking at any of it because I'm fucking on Facebook for the third time in an hour. Making sure no one's... Oh.
Yeah.
Nobody goes into Insight for technology addiction, though, do they?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. So what's the process? I'm a heroin addict. I've lived in rural BC, and I've moved to the city. Mm-hmm. I'm shooting it up, and somebody told me about this place called Insight. Yep. Where is it, first of all? On Hastings?
Yeah.
Is it a secret? No.
139 East Hastings. No, not a secret.
139 East Hastings. In the heart of the zombie district?
They call it... it's been called Four Blocks of Hell.
Yeah.
It's also been called the Calcutta of Canada.
I mean, it's such an interesting idea to take everybody and say, okay, as long as you stay here and you keep the violent crime down, we're not going to fuck with you.
Yeah. I mean, they still get fucked with.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, I mean, they know that drug users are there.
Yeah.
They know that everyone's going to Insight to use their drugs.
So who fucked the cops to come down and do fuck with them?
Well, they're all over the place. They're all over down there.
I thought they had an understanding. Is that not true?
What's that?
I thought they had a sort of an understanding.
They do have an understanding, but it's not that they're... I mean, they're still there. They still have to do their job. They still have to, you know, maintain a certain amount of control and safety and security, which...
Yeah.
His words are a little bit...
That's what Donovan said, yeah. Well, Donovan said, like, that he would get on a first-name basis with the cops, and they'd be friendly with them because they'd have to deal with them all the time.
Right,
just like any vendor you deal with if you're running, a bar or something anything, or 7-Eleven. But, like, but then if he stole ice cream or something, then they'd be like, Donovan, get over here.
Yeah.
We know you did something.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like... They're like, just don't steal from 7-Eleven anymore. We keep telling you. Just fucking stay. You can sleep on your feet for 3 days.
Yeah.
That's fine. Just stay here and don't steal.
But see, that's what it comes down to for some people. Like, you know, they're like literally trying to get by. Like, stealing from 7-Eleven, like, you know what I mean? Like, you're in your 30s and you're stealing from 7-Eleven. You think you actually, like... want to do that, like, fills you with pride?
Right. It definitely does not.
It definitely does not.
I don't know, though, man. When I fly now and I go to Starbucks and I take a water bottle and I put it in my backpack and then I, you know, buy some tea.
Yeah.
And they're like, is that all? I'm like, yeah, that's all. I'm just waiting for them to go, what about the water? I was like, oh, fuck, I forgot. Oh, whoops, I'm so sorry. But I do take pride in that. There is pride. I'm like, yeah, I got a free $3 water.
Everyone wants a deal.
Maybe I'm lower class than heroin addicts in that way. I have a friend who steals all the time, and he just goes, I'm just trying to stay in shape.
Yeah.
Just like little things, like Tic Tacs or something small.
Yeah.
Somewhere if it gets caught, it's not going to be the biggest problem, but he's just trying to stay in practice.
That's funny.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm a user. I'm going down there. I hear about this place, 139 Hastings.
Yeah, Hastings, yeah.
139 East Hastings, and I go in the door.
Yeah.
What's my experience? What do I do? What do I tell people?
It's going to be a little bit chaotic in there.
Yeah.
There's going to be like shopping carts in the front area.
Shopping carts in the front from what?
People's homes.
Oh.
Yeah. And so they're all park janky style.
Ever try to steal those?
Oh, yeah. There's lots of theft that goes on from each other.
Oh.
Yeah. It's pretty brutal.
That's the point. Whenever I see those old opium dens in movies, you know, like there was, I think coming Once Upon a Time in America, I think there was one where, I forgot the dude's name. I forget everybody's fucking name. Come on, pot. De Niro was shooting up an open, and then people would just come by and like just take his wallet because he's like, you know, he's zonked out.
Robert De Niro?
Yeah.
What movie's that?
Once Upon a Time in America.
Oh, I never seen it.
Oh, it's a good one. It's the same guy with Once Upon a Time in the West. Ennio Morricone? Maybe he was the music guy. Anyway, yeah, it's good. It's like 3 hours long, though.
I want to check that out.
Yeah. But, it's just a small scene in there where he just gets opiumed up. But like, just, people just steal, and like that just seems like natural. Like, this guy can't defend himself at all.
Yeah.
Or like what Donovan said, like, you're asleep on your feet for 2 days. Yeah. You're not waking up with everything you fell asleep with.
No, that's very true. And even 2 days is like, I mean, there's people that are up for literally weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. And what happens to the body
yeah.
when you're up that long, like the sleep deprivation, is fascinating. I think a lot of people think that when an entrenched user does drugs, it makes them go all crazy and whatever, when in actuality, it's like they've been sick the whole time, and that's the crazy.
Sober time.
That's the crazy.
Yeah.
And as soon as they do the drugs, they're like, ah, now I'm right.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's medicine. To them, it's medicine.
Yeah,
it's
I remember like some old Shield, but this guy was like, I just want to get right.
That's what they always say. I want to get well.
Why? Because they're so used to it that it becomes like, just their body just gets like, needs.
Yeah.
Bobby Lee used to take tons of pills, and he talks about it, so it's not like a betrayal, but, yeah. you know, and sleeping pills. And at first, he would take like one or two, and then it became like, he would need 25 or 30 just to be able to fall asleep.
Totally.
And without it, there's no way he's falling asleep.
Yeah, exactly. That's wow. what it becomes. It just becomes one of those things. Like, and you hear it all the time, people saying, you know, oh, I just need my coffee. I just need my coffee, and then I'm good. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Same shit.
It's the exact same thing.
Same shit with caffeine.
Yeah.
My friend Joe quit coffee, and he got these horrible migraines.
Horrible headaches. Yeah,
and I'm like, what does that teach you?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that I shouldn't quit coffee. I'm like, no, idiot. I'm teaching you it's a drug.
Totally.
You're addicted to it.
Yeah.
You're having withdrawal symptoms. That's a sign that you're addicted to a drug.
Full on.
That's like the sign yeah. that when you come off it, you start shaking and shit.
Exactly. well, there's people, there's like young girls that have like, will have like 5, 6, 7, 8 coffees.
Yeah.
A
yeah.
day. It's
yeah.
crazy.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, I fine, just need it.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? I had a rabbi when I was growing up. He was so addicted to coffee that Yom Kippur is like a fast day, a 24-hour fast day, and you can't drink anything either.
Yeah.
So he'd have to start like a month ahead of time, start slowing down his coffee intake.
Oh, wow.
So he wouldn't get like pass out. I get on this, on sugar.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I started quitting one day a week.
Yeah, sugar's
my friend
another
did.
Big one. You hear this
I almost
lot?
Passed out.
Yeah, yeah.
Last time I started getting like that head, we're like, oh, I'm hot. It was like raining and cold out in New York, and I was like sweating, and I was like, I need to sit down. I just had to like crush pineapple.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the only way I could like. I was with my friend. I'm like, dude, I know it's only 5 blocks. We gotta take a cab.
No
I
shit.
Can't make it, man.
That's hilarious.
God, it's.
Most of my friends are like, you know, it's almost like food now has become like. Some sort of substance you have to control.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And everyone's like weaning off and sort of yeah. carving out the edges and making sure, you know, getting their sugar intakes really low and no gluten, you know,
yeah.
all this kind of thing. So it's like the way that we consume now has become this kind of interesting.
It is.
Yeah.
What's the Canadian, how long have you been in Canada?
Well, I grew up here.
Oh, you did?
When
okay.
I went to this, I only got back from the States about 5 or 6 years ago now.
When what's your USDA? Do you have one? A Drug and Food Administration? Food and Drug? You don't have one.
I don't think so.
We have the FDA, Food and Drug Administration. They're in charge of like saying what's safe and like making
okay.
them put the calorie shit on there.
Right, right.
Like
yeah.
someone does that. Someone forces them to do that.
Yeah.
Or they wouldn't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So whoever that is, at some point, I think recently people realize like, oh, that's just a garbage company. The FDA, and they're really not looking out, and all this caffeine and sugar
yeah.
and all this shit, they just call something, they allow them to call it sucrose instead of sugar.
Yeah.
They're like, they're not looking out for us, so I gotta do this myself.
Totally.
So you gotta start weaning off gluten and all yeah. these things. Like, what, I'll research my own stuff. Like,
totally.
What does it do for me?
You gotta get smart and educated.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of those documentaries that were coming out about food were just saying, like, basically, you're every time you pay money for something, you're
yeah.
voting.
What do you mean?
Like, you're actually voting with your money. You're casting your vote. You're saying, like, this is where I want to put my hard-earned money.
Right.
Into. So if you're putting your money into, I don't know, like, say, Starbucks.
Yeah.
Then that's sort of like your vote. You're on board for what they're on board for. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're like, yeah.
Yeah, you sort of believe in their cause, and you're, like, and you're helping out
you're
that
supporting
cause.
Them.
Yeah. So it becomes the same thing. It's like, if you only buy organic or... whatever else it's
right
like,
then more, the more you buy organic, the more organic stores can pop up.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Look at this, they put like 0 trans fat, 0 grams trans fat on a fucking Twizzlers.
Yeah.
And you're like, see, healthy.
Totally. It's got a
real licorice root extract made
yeah.
with real fruit juice, and it's like, all right,
yeah, really fake.
Yeah. And I mean, granted, that's Twizzlers soft bites, but which are delicious, by the way.
Yeah.
But like if that's on anything like bread or something, you're like, well, that actually means healthy.
Totally.
This I can oversee. I get candy's never going to be healthy for
right.
me, but yeah.
It's a color. You should be aware of the color.
Beer with a color? Yeah,
the color. If there's like the bright, vibrant, like looks like little kids' toys.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, then be aware. Yeah.
They're like they're advertising to dumb people who are like, ooh, pretty.
Yeah.
Instead of like, what did the words say?
Right.
Yeah.
But even, even at that, like they
these both have bright colors.
There's brands now that it's like the brand is called Organics.
Yeah. And it's not organic?
There's nothing organic about it, but it's they've bought the word or whatever else.
Yeah, there's a new Coke that says Coke Life. With like green writing, because green is always like healthy.
Sure, right.
And it's like it has like less sugar or has natural cane sugar or something like that.
Yeah.
That was another big craze. Natural sugar. I was like, all right. Like, no, that's not healthy. That's just sugar.
Yeah.
How is that? That was never healthy before. 50 years ago, they only used natural sugar and it was still candy that wasn't healthy for you.
But this culture I'm actually quite glad we're talking about it because it's totally in line with what addiction kind of is because the more healthy you get, the more you start getting into like a culture and all these crazes of like sort of regulating your health, regulating your diet, regulating your intake. And it becomes this strange clinical world where it's like, what are you putting into your body? And what are the benefits of it? And people are addicted to running. They have to run. It's like, you bring up like bulimia and anorexia and like people's relationship to their food and whatever else. And it just, I mean, you look around, we're very healthy. Like Canada's a very healthy society. But in health, it's an interesting term, right? Because there's also like mental health issues.
Yeah, there are people that are addicted to like exercise.
Yeah,
they get on that end.
Yeah, and depression and like all the.
How is Canada with mental health and depression?
I don't know. I'm not very well informed. To be totally clear,
okay. Yeah, in America, I'm in a bunch of worlds. I'm in the United States, but I'm also a comedian, so that's mostly the world I hang out in. Yeah. So my version of America is not, it's not like Arkansas.
Yeah,
I'm a comedian, and I live in a big city.
Yeah.
The metropolis of New York, so that's also different. Like Vancouver is different than fucking, an hour outside Vancouver.
Yeah.
Whistler. Life in Whistler is not the same as life here.
Very true. I mean, I think that's the thing is a lot of people's experience of Vancouver is, ask them about the downtown east side. It's like, you're taking a cab through it, you blink and it's over.
Yeah, most people never see Hastings.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because Gastown is really popular and becoming...
It's right next to it.
Yeah, it's right next to it. So it's like, I don't know if you've ever been to like Mexico, certain parts of Mexico. Yeah. It's like rich, rich, rich. And you turn the corner and it's just like totally
awful. Machine guns.
Yeah.
Poverty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like vicious poverty.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in the comedy community of Los Angeles and New York, depression's all over.
Yeah.
And we all talk about it and are pretty open about it. There's no stigma anymore.
Yeah.
But when I see new comics coming in or so they're not like inundated into the world or when I go other places, There's this feeling of like, oh, those people are weak.
Right.
Just man up.
Yeah.
You're not depressed. Just get out of bed and do your thing.
Sure.
And it's like, oh, you're not viewing this as like any sort of disease at all or anything. It's like any broken thing in your body.
Yeah.
I think it's the same thing with drug addiction too, where people go, just fucking quit. Get a job.
Yeah, get over it.
That's not going to do it.
Yeah, yeah. People really, and myself included, being that I've never even done drugs, I haven't been around drugs, this kind of thing growing up, it wasn't like all my friends did drugs or anything like that, especially not hard drugs.
Yeah.
And so, I'm just like, you learn as you go. And it's like, I'm a very passionate person and I really care about this community.
Yeah.
And it gets tricky because I want to start doing that too. I want to start going like, how the fuck do you not know that? Like, how do you not know that about these people? Like these really general, broad sweeps that people do about addiction, and the like lack of empathy or the lack of compassion on it is like it's craziness. And it's, but I guess it isn't. I guess it's normal. I guess it's like out of sight, out of mind for most people. Or
I think it comes from a place too of like a feeling like that people want to explain the world. I think.
Yeah.
And so I talked to this woman once whose kid had died from SIDS, from sudden infant death syndrome, and she said that. All these other parents, they couldn't accept it. They couldn't accept that her child just died for no reason. So they're like, well, did you have her on her back or her stomach? Whichever one's right. I don't know which one's right. But like, oh, you must have had her on the wrong side. And they're like, no, we don't. We knew that we fucking read that shit. We put her on the right side. And because other parents, they needed to put the world in a place of like, there must be a reason why your child is dead and my child is alive.
Right.
It exactly. can't just be random.
Yep.
That's, I can't accept the world like that. And so then we're like, oh, fucking heroin addict. You must be a weak. And it's not just like, oh, instead of his friends being into weed, his friends were into heroin.
Right, exactly.
And then at 17, he just got hooked, and that's his life.
Yeah.
It's changed forever because of that.
Yeah.
Because some girl he wanted to fuck was like, try this.
Totally.
You know, it's not somebody's fault.
No. Yeah, this is a huge, like, it's actually beautiful to hear you say that, because it's actually quite rare to have someone say that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, most people are just like, they just can't wrap their head around the idea of why you would stick a needle in your arm. And it is, it's quite dramatic.
Yeah.
It's not, you know what I mean? Like, there's a real stigma there. Like, it's like, it really does seem out of this world. And when myself and my coworkers are working there, and we've been there for years,
yeah.
some of us, every once in a while, we'll be like, holy shit.
What?
Like, we work here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we forget. It's like, sometimes it's just like bussing tables.
Yeah.
And then you look up, or you just come out of like a really brutal conversation with someone, and you know, you're all shooken up and moved by it and whatever, and you're like, Jesus, like, I work here. You know what I mean? Like, this is my job every single day.
Job the world people don't even like know exists.
Yeah.
Forget about C. They don't even know it really exists.
Yeah.
Man.
How did I get this job? Like, how am I working? I mean, it'd be different, and that's the thing. I think if I came from drug use,
yeah.
it would kind of make sense. It's like, right. I want to give something back and whatever. But like, I haven't so much as snorted coke. You know what I mean? I haven't done mushrooms. I haven't,
you haven't done mushrooms?
I haven't done shit.
All right. Here's
I did try mushrooms once, and I think I just got, I don't know if I got a bad
Well, how batch. Much you do? Just like a little bit?
Just like, yeah, a few little small dried ones.
A lot of times people are so scared that they're going to like go crazy on it. They don't take enough.
Right, yeah.
They're like, come on, man. There's no ODing on it. You just get trippier.
Yeah. That's my big thing with drugs is I was given like a really artistic sort of hardwiring.
Yeah.
That I feel I get really, like Jim Carrey said it one time. He's like, man, he's like, I don't do drugs. He's like, you do not want to see me on drugs. He's like, actually, it would probably do the opposite for me. Like, it'd
calm
probably make me really fucking normal.
Yeah.
And then he's like, there's Jim off to the fucking library again. He did that some stand-up in the 80s when he said that. It was called Jim Carrey's Unnatural Act. Have you ever seen that?
Uh-uh.
Oh, it's fucking
Jim Carrey's
hilarious.
Unnatural Act?
Unnatural Act. Super good.
Well, that's what his like special's called? Unnatural Act?
This was a... It's sort of around the In Living Color time.
Yeah,
like,
that's when he was a stand-up.
Like pre-Ace Ventura, yeah, he was doing stand-up. And I'm pretty sure it was in Whistler.
Really?
I'm pretty sure it was Whistler. And it was maybe in the 80s, early 90s, called Unnatural Act.
It's I remember awesome. One bit he had that was... the Comedy Store had a 20th anniversary, and all the stars came back, the people who started there.
Yeah.
Because he used to be homeless, sleep in his car out
right.
in the parking lot.
Totally.
So he came back, and he was already a giant star at that point. He just broke.
Yeah.
And he was like, let me do some jokes where I relate to the people. And he goes, do you ever have sex with four supermodels at once? And just when you're about to come, the least hot one says, save it for me. Oh, am I right, you guys?
Oh, that's
not even the ugliest one, the least hot one. The least beautiful, something like that.
Of the four hot ones,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
hilarious.
Do you guys get like? Are you guys like super friends there? That work there?
We are and we aren't. It's like
yeah.
I mean, we're like tighter than tight
yeah.
because of that link that we have,
shared experience.
That shared experience. We're like in the trenches together, and it's like, you know, we lean on each other pretty hard, and we all like super love each other, and we all appreciate like where we're at and know what it is that, like, you know, common goals and whatnot. But we don't oftentimes hang out together outside of work because I think a lot of people sort of just hole up after like a work week.
Really?
Yeah, we just sort of like, it's like called self-care. You know what I mean? Like we have to be okay to keep working there.
Oh.
You know what I mean? So we don't party or, I mean, I don't think so. I don't think the majority of the people that are down there are like,
Go nuts.
I mean, I live like a grandpa lifestyle, I call it. It's wow. like people are like, oh man, like, you know, participants will say like, I bet you get into some crazy shit on the weekends. And I'm like, nope, I know it looks that way, but
what
I'm like...
What do you do? Just go hiking and just veg out in your...
Yeah, hikes, tea, I motorbike is my big therapy. Yeah. And read books.
Just try to get away baths. From it?
Yeah, just try and like stay good. You know, stay sane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do people burn out?
Yeah, big time. I think it's about... I think, and I'm not 100% sure about this, but I think it's about 6 months is like your average burnout rate.
And then they're just like, I can't work here anymore.
Yeah. I don't know if that's, I don't know how accurate that is, but that's what I've heard.
Yeah. You've been there for a while though.
I've been there for, 5 years. Well, with the PHS, I've been, so that was the hotels as well. Like,
what's that?
PHS has a whole bunch of different projects.
What's PHS?
It's a Portland Hotel Society.
What does that mean? What is that?
It's,
Oh, they just have hotels in Portland.
Wait. Yeah, but they're not hotels like the Sheraton. They're like very, very low barrier residencies for people that...
An hour at a time?
Social housing.
The super poor.
It's the projects.
Yeah. Yeah, they have those down there in Hastings where they have those abandoned buildings. Like, let's rent them to those people.
Yeah.
For like whatever it is, $50 a month or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But they have like no windows.
Yeah, no these... Yeah, I don't know. This is the whole area that I'm like, even when I start thinking about it, my head starts spinning because I'm like, it's such an area that I just don't understand. I don't understand why buildings down there aren't, like, why a certain amount of them aren't just being sort of offered over for people that are having trouble.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But instead it's like, who could buy it out? Who's got the most money? And then like... try and kick people out and try and send them somewhere else to die in a corner. It's something I don't really understand.
Yeah, it's all about money. Yeah. It's the thing that they talk about socialism. I went to Denmark for some comedy festival and my friends from there, and I was asking them all these questions, but they have socialism. They're just socialist. Mm-hmm. They're fully socialist, not like pieces of it. So they take 70% of your money.
Yeah.
You earn $100, the government's taking 70 of that. You're taking 30.
Yeah.
But there's no homelessness.
Yeah.
The streets are clean and beautiful, and everything's taken care of. You know, you like you live in a paradise, and you give up the extra 40% of taxes that you pay, a 35% extra.
Yeah. So
it's like you got to take care of. Like, there's a human living in a gutter.
Yeah. Fuck them. That's their choice.
Well, this guy has to earn money.
Yeah.
That's the problem with capitalism. Get a job. You worship that god of money, and then becomes everything else is like not that god.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a problem. Anyway. So you guys don't really hang out with each other as much, or you haven't seen that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, like, I try and recover. I try and, like, recoup and, like, stay as mentally healthy as I can to continue working down there, because it's definitely not easy.
Yeah.
It definitely gets its hooks in you, and it affects you, and people constantly asking me how I can work down there at all, period. And then how I could work nights, which is doubly hard.
So what time do you work? What's your shift?
We start around 6:30 and we end at 4 in the morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, that's a long shift.
Yeah. And it's intense. Like, there's, there's violence down there.
Tell me some violence. Like, what happens?
Well, we're dealing with everyone from, like, people that just got out of prison to sex trade workers, to drug dealers, to drug addicts. You know what I mean? Like, it's a criminal community in a lot of ways.
Right.
And so those people are rubbing elbows with each other and they're trying to get along, but they're also high on drugs and there's bars down there. And so it's just all that together.
Yeah, once you get alcohol, that's like, when you're like, why did that guy fight that guy? It doesn't make any sense. Like, booze. Booze makes it not make sense.
Yeah, like in a lot of ways, it's quite ironic because Granville Street over here is like so violent. Like on the weekends, it's so fucking violent.
With the bro dudes.
Yeah, and it's all people like...
people getting out of bars. Like, hey man, you got a problem? And totally. Like, no, I just walked and hit your shoulder by accident. Like, it's not a problem. There's a lot of people here.
Exactly, and they leave you bloodied and bashed on the side of the street. And that's like... that's not a hyperbole. This happens all the time, and people are shit scared to go down there. And...
But that's where people go to hang out, right?
Yeah.
That's where regular people go to drink also, and then just someone here there just gets beat up.
Yeah, well, it's like it's kind of a strange community. I think a lot of people come from smaller towns and they have a certain idea about big city life and whatever, and so they like yuck it up, you know?
Yeah.
But in a lot of ways, the downtown east side is quite safe. I mean, I've never I mean, yeah, I guess I'm a big guy and tattoos and the whole deal, but I've never really felt super unsafe down there.
It's weird. You turn the corner. If you're walking, you turn the corner, and then all of a sudden you're like, what's happening here? Why is all, like, this got way more dangerous. And then, but it's like, I was half a block in or a block before I realized, and it's like, I'm in it.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, there's no, like, it seems like that should be a place where I'd get robbed instantly.
Yeah.
But it really isn't.
No, they
that dangerous.
They tend to rob each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why? They just know they can get away with that better?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. Because they see each other, you know, they know when someone's really fucked up, and so it's
vulnerable.
Like, yeah, they're vulnerable, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's too. It's like it weakens you. So I'm like, well, this guy's fucking got his full power.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know.
It's depleted.
I only ate ice cream for the last month. Yeah. So I'm not, my protein levels are pretty far down.
Yeah. No water, no food, yeah. Just ice cream, sugar.
Yeah. Do you get I love it when the clouds hit the mountain.
Gorgeous.
It goes like right to the mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is gorgeous. Are those houses really expensive, the ones that are in the fucking hill?
I would assume they're very, very expensive.
That's in every country. Puerto Rico, too. Anyone who lives in the hills looks down on the poor.
Right.
You know, they get out.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to assume.
If the water levels start rising, they're still good.
Yeah, they're still fine. Like, global warming, like, bring it on. I want beachfront property.
Totally.
Yeah. So you get dealers to go down there? They're like, that's a good place to go to cop?
Yeah.
Something to sell?
Dealers set up shop down there. Yeah.
Is that, do you try to chase them out, or is that a problem, or is that just like an inevitability?
It's just an inevitability.
I keep saying this like,
There's so much that I don't know and don't eat. Like, I would absolutely, like, one of the most fascinating things was working in the, what we call the hotels, the low barrier hotels, the social housing, because you would get an idea of the squalor, like the absolute abject poverty of the situation. And then, you know, you'd be working there and seeing the ins and outs of, like, you know, Johns and the sex trade and how that all looks, and seeing people's rooms and helping people clean up their rooms. And this kind of thing was just endlessly fascinating, because it's like walking into a whole different world. And then it also feels like walking into a different, like, time zone or era. Like, there's something about it. You know what I mean? Like, that you mentioned opium dens and like ideas of like brothels and that kind of thing. And that's a little bit like what it feels like. It's like the land before time. Like, you just walk into these weird little time capsules.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really strange.
Wow.
Like, some people preserve their rooms from like 1970s to a T.
Oh, they've had those rooms. They just keep them, and they're just like,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's crazy.
Oh, wow. So, like, yeah.
And it's just not
your... Flying the family stone poster.
And it's just not your average... Like, they're not thinking in the same terms of, like, getting by and... Well, they're definitely thinking in terms of getting by, but they're not, you know what I mean? The way that we're, like, cars and money and a home and all this kind of stuff. Because all that stuff isn't there, it's like this... There's, I don't know, there's, like, a strange element to how they live, like how they actually sort of, I guess, survive would be a better word.
There's sort of a coolness to it.
Yeah.
It's like oddly attractive.
Yeah, you know? It is. I think that what attracts me is this, the ultimate rebellion of it. Like, I'm not saying
fuck
that
society.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah,
I'm totally
like,
well,
how many people
that
live in society? Like, everyone but us.
Yeah.
They all live in society.
Yeah.
Or they're gone.
There was a gentleman the other day, I heard him, and he was like passionately, like, this diatribe, and he was like, this is my choice. Like, he's like, this is my fucking choice. He's like, this is what I want to do. He's like, I should be allowed to do what I want to do. And I remember like getting like a lump in my throat, because I was kind of like, it's true, man. Like, you should be allowed, if you want to fuck up your life, or if you want
to, you should be allowed to do that.
You should be allowed to do that.
And people go, no, the government has to step in. Like, well, then what's the limit?
Yeah.
Do they step in when you're eating high cholesterol foods?
Right, exactly.
What about alcohol? That's fucking up your life. I mean,
how
it's
many
a
kids
small
you can
poison.
Have?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You're barely getting by and you're having your fourth child. Like, what? No, you're totally not allowed. We're going to fucking sterilize you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, like, at some point, the government, they'd say, okay, this is where you can't fuck up your life. But why? You should be allowed to, as long as you're not hurting anyone else.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the thing. I guess that they would see it as, well, you are hurting not just yourself.
Property value?
That's,
that's a leap. I mean, unless you're saying there's violence attached, but that's an individual level.
I guess that's the thing, is they think it's like, they immediately equate it to crime.
Yeah.
Right? That's the, like, the number one thing. They're like, where did you get that money? If you don't have, like, a proper job, where did you get that money? That means immediately that's crime.
And like, oh, you must have sold drugs. Like, all right, but that's still not hurting anyone.
Right.
My friend does a, Kurt Metzger used to do a bit about it, where he was reading Batman.
Yeah.
And Batman was like, I'm going after the source, the drugs. And he goes, what? My drug dealer? Carl? Carl's great. Don't go after him.
Yeah.
How am I going to get a weed if you fuck with Carl? Like, they offer a service.
Yeah.
It's not like they're selling drugs. It's not, they're not doing it to children.
Yeah.
I mean, that's different when they're at schools trying to fucking, but it's like, they're a businessman.
But it's the leaps. That's where we come up with everything, is the leaps. We're like, well, if someone is buying drugs and they're doing drugs, they're probably out of their head. And then what happens if, like, you know, they're around their kids while they're doing it, and they just keep making leap after leap.
I think it wasn't so hypocritical with alcohol, where it's like, yeah, because people fucking drink and beat the fuck out of their kids.
Yeah.
But that's still, I mean, that happens. But we're not going to outlaw alcohol for everybody.
Yeah.
And I think alcohol is super dangerous. I do it once in a while.
Yeah.
I'll treat it exactly like a drug.
Yeah.
I'll do it once in a while, but you know, it's putting me in a position of like I'm in less control, and that's fine. It's the same as when I do mushrooms or whatever. But like, it's bad for me. It fucks with my liver.
Yeah.
It's poison.
Fucks with your general.
But I still want it to be allowed.
Yeah. Because the thing of it is, if we start doing that with everything, then it's like, then what kind of society are we going to live
1984.
In? 1984.
Yeah. But and it's like, we'll choose everything for you.
Even the word society sort of bugs me.
Why?
I don't know. I'm the type of person, I'm like in it, but not of it. I don't.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's tricky. It's hard.
Oh, you got neck tattoos.
Yeah.
Once you get neck tattoos.
But I don't want to like move out into the country either. Like, I don't want to like.
Right.
I don't want to grow a garden and fucking not live in the city and plant all my food and I don't know.
You don't want to do that.
I don't want to do
that. Yeah. Yeah. That's a different side of non-society.
Yeah.
But that seems like I want to go to your stores. I just don't want to like participate in stocking those stores.
Yeah. It's tricky, right? Because tattoos and that kind of thing, it like equates a certain kind of like anarchy or anti-society or whatever.
It equates with it. That's what it is. Yeah. It doesn't mean you have to be that, but it equates with it.
Right. And then more and more, it's becoming like a really socially acceptable kind of a thing. And
you ever see SLC Punk? That movie?
Yeah.
So that guy, John, or whatever his name is, when he was wearing like a polo shirt, and he'd beat the fuck out of people all the time at punk shows.
Mm-hmm.
And he had glasses and a polo shirt on, and everyone else was dressed like a punker.
Totally.
And they're like, but he was the baddest ass one there. And it's like, you don't, just because you dress a certain way doesn't mean you're definitely of that world.
Yeah, or serial killers.
Yeah.
They always look like super fucking nerdy old guys. You know?
Beat a nerd, they're like, you're so lucky today. Because I already have my dungeon full. yeah.
They look like Mormons or fucking Bible salesmen or something.
Yeah. You would never suspect.
Yeah.
How much fucking is there going on at these places?
Fucking?
Yeah. Because, like, I know there's sex, there's trade sex for, I mean, once you overvalue scoring, you devalue the other stuff.
Okay.
Like, stealing is not as bad. Mm-hmm. You know, also giving up sex is not as bad.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that's what I got from Donovan, from all the people, users I've talked with. It's just like, they're like, whatever, so I fucked some guy, so I blew some guy. It's just skin-to-skin contact. Doesn't really matter.
Right, right.
But, like, how much is there going on there? Do you have to, break it up? Is there
you, what do you mean?
Secret stuff?
Insight?
Yeah.
Oh, none of that.
It doesn't happen.
No, because actually at the building of Insight?
Yeah.
No.
Really?
The thing of it is when you're that, from what I gather, when you're that fucked up on drugs, and I've actually heard someone say this the other day, they're like, dude, I have zero fucking sex drive.
Oh, yeah. It drops your drive down.
Yeah. They're like, I haven't fucked in years. And they're like, as soon as I get clean, that's what I want to do. It's like, I start feeling like a human being again.
Oh, and then it's been a while and they're backed up. Like, right, I got to unload this. Oh, I would love that. No sex drive. It would help my life so much. If I just completely got rid of the drive.
Yeah.
Not if I couldn't get a hard on, but if I just didn't have the desire.
Right.
Fuck, that would help me.
Yeah, it's a weapon of mass distraction.
Yeah.
Another one.
Weapon of mass distraction. What's that from? I like that saying.
It's just a term, I think.
God, it really is. I mean, I have to like once a week or twice a week, I have to be like, okay, I did work for a few days. I gotta fuck tonight.
Yeah.
So I'm just not going to do spots. I'm going to go and get fucked, and then I'll be back into the working again.
Another addiction.
Oh, yeah. My friend Chris is like, he'll fully admit it. He's like, that's mine. I'll go smoke because I don't do that. He's like, always been sober, clean, 100%.
Yeah.
But he's like, yeah, it's my drug.
Yeah.
Like, we're all going to go out to this arcade. You want to come? He's like, can't. I got my drug.
Wow.
Yeah. That's when I know, like, weed is a drug, too, is when I'm like, and I try not to let it be a part of that, but in LA, it's Vancouver, it's the same thing. It's so prevalent. But when some people are like, hey, we're going to go to the back to smoke pot, and I'm like, oh, and I'm talking to, let's say I'm having a conversation with somebody. I'm like, oh, okay. And I was like, excuse me. And I go back there. I'm like, why am I leaving a good conversation that I want to be a part of? I mean, that's the drug addiction then. If I can't, like it's fucking with my life.
So what do you think that it's like, I have a theory that it's like, it's the ritual that's probably the most important part of the drug.
Oh, there's a lot of that. That's what cigarettes is too. Yeah. Where people go like, when I drive, I have to smoke.
Yeah.
So the ritual of it is like, you have to break the habits.
That one I understand. Like I used to smoke.
Yeah, me too.
That I really understand. Like I quit like 8 years ago. Probably a lot of people don't even realize that I used to smoke, but when I was in Portland, I smoked like crazy. And it just gets to this point where it's like, every single thing you do is you would rather smoke. Like it's an excuse. You go to the ocean. You're like, I'm not going to go in. I'm going to stand on the beach and smoke. You go for a hike. You're like, I just want to stay in the fucking parking lot and smoke. Get to the top. You want to smoke. You want to have smoke breaks on the way up.
You're talking about cigarettes?
Cigarettes.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to have smoke breaks. It's like, always like, what are we doing
at work,
here?
You always want to have, you know, every single, I'm going to have another smoke.
You ever take a layover flight instead of a direct flight so that you can smoke?
Exactly.
You know, that's 5 hours. No way. I can do 2 hours and then another three.
Yeah, it gets ridiculous. Like it got to the point with me, and I lived with in like a art house. So it was like all artists. So we pretty much stopped eating. It was just like coffee and cigarettes.
Great way to lose weight.
Yeah, it was amazing. That's like it's really all we did.
That's why people gain weight when they quit smoking. It's not because this nicotine like leaving their body makes them replace it with food. It's because like they need to do something with their hands and mouth.
Totally. That's what I mean about ritual. You know what I mean? Or even replacing like ideas of like religious ritual with like a more primitive form of.
What do you mean?
Like, do you know what the sacrament is? Like people, like Catholics taking like the Eucharist.
The body of Christ.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So it's like, that's a ritual. That's like an undertaking that gives meaning.
Fills your life with some meaning. Yeah. Like, okay, I'm getting connected to God now.
Yeah.
Through this
plus,
thing.
You're like you're actually physically doing something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether you lay prostrate.
No, prostate is something different.
Prostate's a little different. You gotta eat more tomatoes.
I was an English major in college, so it's more embarrassing. I don't know this.
Yeah.
Prostrate.
I think it's prostrate.
Yeah. Is that when you like lie down?
Yeah.
Prostrate yourself. Yeah.
But anyways, all these ideas have like an element to them that I feel like is sort of ritualistic.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think
absolutely.
That's a big, big thing. Like we really try to warn people when they come in and they haven't used many times, like maybe they've only once or twice injected.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, you know, be really, really careful because this idea of actually puncturing your skin with the needle. And I believe I'm correct on this, is that it sort of becomes its own addiction. What do we got?
I mean, like the tattoos.
The tattoos, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I see a lot of a tattoo addiction.
Yeah, and it hurts.
It hurts, but it's like touching, it's puncturing your skin or almost puncturing
it. And actually, it's funny that I've completely forgot that I'm even wearing them.
Yeah, but, it's so part of your body now.
Yeah. But yeah, for sure. I mean, when I first was working there, I think I drew that correlation between the two.
Needles.
Like, yeah, have you ever used needles before? And I'd be like, no. And they'd be looking at me like, really? You got piercings and tattoos and stuff. So I guess I'd never really actually thought.
Well, the way you describe, like, there's a needle puncturing your skin. It's like, there's a needle touching your skin. It's the same thing where it's like, it's an actual physical thing that's happening.
Right. And so what are you actually getting out of it? Because it's like, it hurts.
Uh-huh.
It costs a lot of money. And it doesn't help you in a lot of ways because, I mean, it is changing a little bit now, but generally speaking, like if you want to work at Starbucks or something like that, they make you like wear cover up on your hands if you have hand tattoos.
Oh, didn't they just fight against that at Starbucks? Maybe, was it like Seattle or Portland Starbucks was like?
I remember in Portland, people used to wear like Michael Jackson gloves and stuff like that
to cover up. Yeah, he was like, so still some flair.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous. It's like it doesn't look any better. It's ridiculous. Like,
guys, they're working at a coffee shop.
Yeah,
like this is what people expect to see behind the counter.
Right,
it's not that weird.
Everyone in Portland's tattooed. Everyone's a weirdo, and yet you still got to like. Follow these
be less weird to serve coffee for weirdos.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean about society where I'm like, the fuck is going on? Like, how have we gotten to a place where we can't even make like a logical decision about something?
I'm starting to think now the main problem with all this stuff, with a lot of these things, is making a generalization that everyone has to stick to.
Right.
So like, if you want to have a rule, it's fine, but it doesn't apply to some people.
Yeah.
You know, and Portland, the same rules for Starbucks should not apply as in, you know, some like in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
You know, people are used to seeing tatted up people all over in Portland. So it's just not the same. Like, oh, what is this? When they go, when they see a Starbucks barista.
Yeah.
It's not the same as in a really, you know, political area.
Yeah. It feels like world domination.
Yeah.
In a way, because of the amount of control and regulations that they're trying to, like you're saying, like trying to make like mandate
everyone
for
fit
everyone
in.
Uh-huh. For absolutely everyone.
The Yuck Yucks chain, the comedy club Yuck Yucks, is like that when they want to like book all the comics for all the chain, but then certain local clubs like, but this guy does really well in this market. Why can't we just book him for Calgary?
Yeah,
you know he does well here.
Yeah,
in America they get this because comics who just play the South.
Yeah,
like this guy named Killer Bees, and he crushes it from like Georgia down, you know, just in certain states. But if he goes to like Maine, the crickets, no one will come.
Yeah.
But like, you can't just make a rule for him across the board for America.
Yeah. Remember Bill Hicks?
Yeah.
I got a Bill Hicks tattoo.
Do you really?
Yeah, I love that guy.
I fucking hate him.
Do you really?
He's the most overrated comic.
Really? Why?
He's not funny. He's just prolific. He's just like poignant.
Yeah,
that's he makes his points, but I think he fails in his job to be a comic. If he just called himself a public speaker, I wouldn't have any problem with him.
I
revere him.
That's true. He, it's a good point. I've thought about that a lot. It's like he actually, and he set a certain precedent where I feel like comics started doing like really hyper political shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's true. It did really change the whole game because at some points you're like, and I think he even alludes to it a couple times in a few of his shows.
What was that?
Well, he was like, oh yeah, this is really fucking funny, Bill. Like, he's like, you know, you really like,
that was before Twitter, before you get feedback from people going like, not funny, good points, but not funny. He didn't even get that feedback. He must have just gotten very little here or there. That's funny. He commented on himself.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Not funny, Bill.
Yeah. Like, I'm trying to track this one, where you're going with this one, you know, because you get on these tangents.
It's weird with him where it's like, and as a performer, you should be allowed to go in whatever direction you want. If you want to start playing guitar and that becomes your thing, like you should be able to experience that and do that. And if you want to start painting, you know, if he paints on stage and says, why do I even need the stage and just move? That's fine.
Yeah.
It's just when you still call yourself a comedian, comedians are like, well, then you're not doing the one thing that you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
But he wasn't calling himself anything. He was just calling himself Bill Hicks. So I guess he was allowed.
Yeah, a few people said that he, like a few of his friends were like he was blamed for being like anti-religious or anti-Christian or whatever like that in certain pockets that he was performing in. You know, they would sort of like try and kick his ass out of there.
Oh, really?
From some of his ideas. And one of his friends was like, yeah, I don't think that he was even so much a comedian. It was like he wanted to be Jesus, like overturning the tables in the markets. Like he had like a different kind of agenda going on. It's like you know what I mean? He seemed to have like an agenda. Like he was really pissed off.
Yeah, he seemed like he did at some point, like, I want to fuck with your ideals.
Yeah.
Whatever you think is a given, I want to tell you
that's not.
I think
that's why I really liked him.
Yeah. No, that part was great.
Yeah.
That part I do like.
Who do you like?
Okay, well, so of the stuff that Bill Hicks did,
that
style of comedy, because there's impressionists, which are completely different.
Okay.
And I heard this guy, Carl LeBeau, who used to run with Kinison, and he said that early Bill Hicks, what he did, like, his dad as a character and stuff, he goes, that guy would kill me.
Yeah.
When he was just goofy and fun.
Yeah.
And then he started getting serious, and it wasn't as funny.
Yeah.
But
it's true,
who I like
really
is
serious.
Doug Stanhope.
don't know.
Doug Stanhope in his prime would do the same social commentary, okay. social and political commentary, but he would do it with punchlines.
Oh, okay.
And then it was like, oh, that's what Bill Hicks was going for, but he just forgot the punchlines.
Yeah.
I like Bill Burr now a ton.
Yeah, I love Bill
Burr.
He's
like my favorite, probably.
Yeah, that's awesome. I listen
to it. It always just sounds like his real thoughts.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't sound like he's doing material.
Yep. That's cool. I'm glad. I've been listening to him a lot.
God, he's good.
Yeah, he's so good.
And just so much new material, and it's fucking awesome every time.
Yeah.
God,
and he's edgy, too.
And he's edgy.
Yeah, which you gotta like that.
Yeah, you can relate to it. And even when you can't relate to it, you at least go like, well, I get that's your experience.
Totally.
I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he talks about getting a big pit bull, and he's like, I like it when people cross the street to go away from me. I like it. I like the feeling of power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But see, okay, so that, even that relates to, back to drugs.
Why? How?
Because...
Good segue. Because Nija is my co-host. I'm going to bring it back.
Come on. Ruining it. But it's true. All these kinds of things, because pit bulls had like serious fucking stigma for a long time, right?
And they should be illegal.
Right. Exactly. And now it's totally changing.
And then you meet somebody with a pit bull and they're so sweet. Yeah. And you're like, oh, it's not the breed, it's the fucking training.
And then people still have that like conspiracy theory mistrust
of pit bulls.
Oh, they're like, yeah, but just wait. At one point they're going to like basically shoot up a school. Like you just wait. They're gonna like mow some kid's face.
Because they have the power to if they wanted to.
Yeah.
But they just
Yeah.
But I mean, you gotta beat the shit out of them and torture them to get them to be real killers.
Yeah. And a lot of them did come from that, so I think that's why people. And again, this is the stigma about the drug user. It's like a lot of them did come from that.
Yeah.
And so they're like, well, when are they gonna kill again? So to
speak. That's what Burr has about no rescue dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was like, right, this dog's been in prison for fucking years before I got to him.
Yeah.
He's going to have a dream one day of his old owner beating him. He's waking up. He's like, oh, you're a human. You're just like him. Arr, just fucking bite the shit out of his neck. No, friend. Yeah. I don't want a rescue dog. They've been jaded. He said something like that.
Yeah.
So there's no fucking going on there. So, okay, hold on. Describe this place to me. Describe it inside. Is it a big warehouse? I picture it as a waiting room and then a giant warehouse. With beds.
Okay. It's more like, it's like, you know those clubs that are like super hole in the wall? Like you don't even really realize they're there.
Yeah.
It kind of is like that. You could miss it really easily. And except
nondescript
for
all, door.
Except for all the chaos going on outside.
Right.
But yeah, nondescript door. You walk in, there's like a ramp that comes up into like a waiting room area.
Okay.
So right at the desk is a bunch of supplies. So you could come in, just get cleans and leave.
Do you take them from a person or just grab a bunch or what do you do?
Yeah, they can just grab them. I mean, usually there's some sort of dialogue there so that we're like, hey, how's your day? What's up?
So that nobody just takes 1,000 and leaves.
Yeah, people can do that.
Sell them. They can do that.
Well, yeah, I don't think people don't do that.
Okay.
But yeah, I guess you could. I mean, I think the most we give out is usually about 100, like a box.
100 of them.
Yeah.
Because you're like giving to people.
Yeah, because a lot of people, I mean, they live in, say 2 hours away from here.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're like, oh my God, needles.
This is I need this for a few months.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, so you want them to have a plenty.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? Is that if you don't have them, you're going to steal or you're going to be using the same needle over and over again. And then, of course, that's what harm reduction is. That's our whole...
Take down the possible scenarios where you could fuck yourself up.
Yeah, AIDS, bloodborne pathogens, Hep A, B, C.
What are bloodborne pathogens?
Well, because anything that gets past, if you've got blood on your rig, and then if you're continuing to use that with all the germs and bacteria and whatever, and then that gets passed, right?
Yeah.
If you have a cut in your hand or whatever like that, and you touch someone else, whatever. So we're trying to reduce all that kind of thing.
Do they give it a whole rig? Because they always talk about clean needles, but the thing you like draw in the blood, that gets dirty too, doesn't it? I don't know what that part's called. Like there's a needle, the plunger,
Yeah, it's all one piece. It's an insulin needle is what it is. Yeah.
So that's what you're giving out, the whole rig.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not needles that you change into different
No. It's shots. Like, no, it's one individual little packet.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm such a fucking straight edge guy with needle shit. I've just never gotten into it. I've never seen it. It's never been a part of my world in any way.
Most people haven't. I mean, okay, if you go, say you went to go get an STI test, right? you would sit down, a nurse would come in, she'd put a suture around your arm,
mm-hmm.
and then she would draw out some of your blood, right? So that's essentially what's happening. It's a medical facility,
okay.
and people are coming in and they're self-medicating, and we're making sure that we just keep an eye on them, make sure everything is...
They don't start shaking and...
Yeah, I mean, we're there for... We deal with ODs, too.
Yeah.
Right? So we're just... Keep an eye on them, making sure they're good, making sure that they're educated about themselves, their yeah. bodies. Sorry, it's what okay. they're and just like that dialogue is really, really important to keep things. I mean, non-judgment is a huge part of what we do.
Mm-hmm. Is that hard?
For me, it's not hard at all.
You've been there for a while.
It's my favorite part of the job. Yeah.
The non-judgment.
Yeah, big time.
Hey, man, what's up?
Yeah, all just people.
Yeah,
just trying to get by.
That, when I finally discovered that was on a mushroom trip.
Oh, yeah.
And it was me and my friends. We have this holiday called Shroomfest that we do every year.
Yeah.
And so we'd taken a bunch at this comedy condo in San Diego, and then we're like coming down and we're going to get some food.
Yeah.
And but we're still on it. There's still that stage of like, okay, I'm not like shaking and like lying on the ground, but like I'm still like feeling it.
Yeah.
And I would see these bums, whatever drug addicts, whatever yeah. they were on. And for the first time, I was like, oh, I just got caught in a different drug than you did. Right. Like I just got lucky.
Yeah.
Like we're the same.
Yeah.
And then it was like, here's some money, man. Here. Yeah. Sorry. We're no different. Like yeah. just it's well, what, hard like, not what, to feel like
what is like what are drugs?
What are drugs exactly?
You know what I mean, like what are you're taking something in and then it's altering your state or it's medicating you or it's changing your perception of things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, like what
I had these
what,
Arab girls or Muslim girls on my show last night. They were goody two-shoes girls.
Yeah.
And I was shitting on like people having babies and stuff, and they're like, "We want to have kids." And I was like, "Okay, they're a big nice, but like," and I was like, "What about you guys? Do drugs? You do mushrooms?" Like, no, like it's drugs. We don't do. And they're drinking. They have two drinks each on yeah. their table.
Yeah.
And like, why don't you do any drugs? No mushroom, no pot. Like, why not? Why not mushrooms?
Yeah.
And she was like, "It's bad for you." I'm like, "The booze is really bad for you. That's yeah. liver damage. That's a shitload of bad stuff.
Yeah.
The worst." Mushrooms gives you is diarrhea.
Yeah.
And so it's talking about bad for your body. That's just a drug. You just got lucky because yours is legal.
Yeah.
It's totally a drug.
It's totally true. It's totally true.
Everybody goes by like the laws idea on it. Well, the government says this is illegal and this is not.
Right.
So that's yeah. what I'll go by too.
Right. That's why the prohibition is constantly brought up when it comes to like drug laws and insight and these kinds of things is because as soon as it's been made okay,
yeah.
then all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, it's normal. It's cool.
Then I'll just
it's
do
fine.
It. Right.
Yeah. So then people are like, they kind of go A plus B equals C. Well, if that can happen, can't that again happen? And then we actually start taxing the shit out of it.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, some people, especially with alcohol, can't handle it.
Yeah.
So some people who can, and most people in their 20s can handle it, most people in their 50s can't as much. Yeah. You know, you can't get drunk every time, but like, your body just can't deal with it. But like, you just need the government or someone, whoever, some outreach to be like, let me help you. The people who can't handle it, let's get you some help.
Yeah.
And so with weed, the same thing. Some people smoke pot all day and they don't do any work, and it's like you're not handling it well.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean it shouldn't be available to anyone because right. some people can handle it. It's like they need help.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
So people come in and they want to shoot up. Well, do you think having a place like Insight increases drug use?
No.
You don't think so?
No, I really don't.
Because I have, for years now, been super inquisitive, I guess. I've wondered about heroin.
Yeah.
I want to know the feeling. When I see a guy like Philip Seymour Hoffman, after 30 years,
yeah.
go back to it and just go crazy, I'm yeah. like, it must be so good.
Yeah. Of course it's good.
It must be so good.
Of course it's good. It's like how something is that powerful
yeah.
that... It would cause you to devastate your whole life and not
give up
care about
everything else.
Give up everything. I mean, that's like some pot of gold shit right there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like the...
Oh, nothing's important right now.
Yeah,
nothing. It's like when you get a hot girl and she's like, hey, I'm going to come over to your hotel room. It's like, okay, I'm not going to return my emails for a while.
Yeah.
Because I'll be with this hot girl.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it takes precedent because it's like, it's blowing your mind. It's rocking your world. It's like, it's... You've never experienced anything quite like it. Actually, Jim Carrey talks about how orgasms are like mini vacations in Unnatural Act.
Really?
And he's like, you can't think about anything else when you're in smack dab in the middle of a sexual orgasm. And he's like, and that's probably a little bit what's going down.
You can't think about anything else.
So now why would you not want to think about anything that's going down? Because we live in a beautiful, Vancouver's absolutely gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Tons of stuff to do. You know what I mean? Like beautiful, like rich in resources, blah, blah, blah.
And so why would you not want
to? Why would you want to forget all of your fucking problems to the point where it's like why would you want to do that? Obviously, you have a lot of problems and you need a lot of fucking help and no one is willing to help you, or you don't have, or you don't feel like you have the resources, or you're not, you know, you haven't been educated. Maybe you have like a sixth grade education or you know, these kinds
compare it to me though. So I don't want to forget all my problems, but I do want to try this thing.
Mm-hmm. Then, see.
So, like, yeah. So, what's? I mean,
what's stopping you? Okay, let's ask that. What's stopping you from doing it?
Okay, a few things. Okay. One, accessibility.
Yeah.
I don't see it all the time. If I saw it all the time, like I will be doing DMT at some point soon.
Right.
But I know that's not dangerous. But it's not around. Nobody's like, when people like bring out a joint, like want someone's like, oh yeah, sure. Right. Nobody just brings out some DMT. He's like, oh, you want?
Yeah.
Like alcohol and weed are way more around. Heroin's not around much. I'd have to go looking for it.
Yeah.
So there's that.
And you'd want to, so if you were going to do DMT, you'd want to sort of set up shop, would you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'd want a place like all alone, like this, this hotel, somewhere where I could be alone. I'm really safe. Yeah, totally safe. Exactly. Right. So with heroin, at least, with things like that, that's part of the reasons why I haven't done it yet. And then the fear of something going bad is a major reason.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I see a place like Insight and I'm like, dude, if I would do it eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd have to be a fool not to do it there.
Yeah.
Instead of just trying it in my room and guessing what's an OD amount and what's a good amount.
Right. Well, then the other thing is, how do you know when you purchase your heroin, who you're purchasing it from, what it's been stepped on with, you know, what else is in it?
All my friends talk about coke that way.
Yeah.
Coke is like, it's not pure coke anymore. They cut it up 1,000 times.
Right.
Like, if you go to Columbia, you can get pure coke. They go like, that's not even bad for you.
Right.
Which I don't know if that's true or not, but like, you won't OD on that. It's all the garbage stuff they put in there.
Right. And that's what the majority of the people in the downtown east side are just dealing with, absolute garbage.
Just the worst stuff.
Yeah, it's the worst of the worst for the most part. And then every once in a while, a really strong, really good batch will come through. And then people are just dropping like flies.
Just start dying because...
Yeah. Well, not at Insight, but yeah.
So if they come in, can you tell them, can you tell like how powerful the stuff they're taking is, or no? That's not, you guys don't have that ability.
No, we don't really have that ability. I mean, we, you know, we educate people to be cautious, use smaller amounts, taste their drugs, check in with a few people. We ask them if they trust the person that they got it from, it's someone that they generally get their drugs from, and this kind of thing. So we're trying to just have their back and just trying to make sure that they're making informed decisions, and that if, you know, if shit goes down, then we're there for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you see people, I mean, how often do you get people dying on shifts?
Never.
Never?
In the 10 years that we've been running, we've never had an OD. We've never had a death.
Death from OD.
Yeah.
Wow. What?
Yeah. That's our biggest boast. Like, I think we're on 11 years now.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's what mixed martial arts used to say, and then somebody died in the octagon, or somebody died in a cage right. once, and like, now we can't say it anymore.
Right, right.
You're safer than, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's at this point, it's like almost foolproof.
So wait, how can that be? So they take something, okay, I take something, it's way more pure, I go to Inside, like, hi, how you doing? I got some heroin. They tell you what they're taking? They tell you what they have with them?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm like, I've got heroin.
Yeah.
I'm going to go over there.
Yeah.
To what, a table, a chair?
Yeah, they have booths, stainless steel booth.
What do you mean stainless steel booth?
Stainless steel countertop, mirror in front of them, and two dividers. And on one side, they have like a little rig box.
Like a, what do you mean rig box?
Rig box to put their sharp afterwards when they're done.
To drop it?
Yeah.
So it doesn't, they don't
land on somebody. It's a hazmat, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Oh, those things I see in airport bathrooms.
Yeah.
And then is it private, that booth, or is it more like a cubicle?
It's kind of like a cubicle.
Okay, yeah. So they have little walls, but you can see in and over the top and stuff.
Oh yeah, no, we have a full shot. They're facing away from us.
Okay,
like they're facing the mirrors. You know what I mean? So we're watching all their backs. We're literally got their back.
Got their back.
Yeah.
And then what do you do if somebody keels over? That's probably
normal. Well, hopefully we'll get to to them before that happens, because we go around and we just sort of check in with them. So that we have 13 booths.
13.
Yeah, 13 at one time. And so we, you know, it just, it's constant. They come in, we fill a new, another booth.
It's a lot smaller than I thought.
Yeah. It's probably the biggest one in the world, but it's still relatively small. Like,
is there like a line to get in?
Oh yeah, there's long, long lines to get in.
How long's the wait?
Sometimes close to an hour. Like we should have more. We should have more. It's crazy. Like people leave tough, all the time.
People, I could guess that.
Yeah,
because you know what? I'm just trying to score. I don't.
Well, yeah, or they're down sick and they just can't wait. You know what I mean? Like it's an imperative at that point that they quote get well.
And you don't try to like.
No, we just like act. if they're leaving, we're like, you know, be safe, like buddy up. You know, like find someone to like keep an eye on you when you do your thing. But they will go into the alleys.
Right there.
Yeah.
But you try to minimize harm. So like we can't help you because it's full. But like, hey, do this and this and this.
Yeah.
Or like, hey, here's a needle.
Yeah. And then bring your sharps back so that we can
throw them away properly.
Yeah.
Are they all over the streets there?
Well, there's groups that go around the city and just clean all
carefully
stuff
cleaning
up.
Them up.
Yeah.
God. So, okay. So somebody's on. What else do they take besides heroin?
Honestly, like almost anything you could think of. So
really?
Everything in the prescription drug world, crystal meth, coke, Dilaudid, which
What's
is what
Dilaudid?
Dilaudid would be something that if you were to say get into a car accident,
yeah,
and you were actually here's something that occurs every once in a while is someone will have like an injury claim, like they'll have a what do they call it? Like a workers' compensation kind of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And they will, say, fall off a scaffolding or something and crack a spine or something like this. And so they'll have like a back injury and then they get sent to the hospital and then they get put on a Dilaudid or morphine drip. And then they're sent home and they're sent with a certain prescription that they have to continue to take these painkillers. At some point, they get hooked on the painkiller.
Yeah.
And then they can't go back to work. And then things start snowballing, and then they get depressed. And then they've lost their job or whatever else. And then they literally get hooked on that prescription to the painkillers.
Yeah.
So then they start taking them orally. And then the prescription starts running out, and they're still in immense pain, and they're trying to find how to fill that still, or just
something else.
Yeah, so they try absolutely everything, and when that runs out, someone along the way will be like, "Have you ever tried, you know, mainlining it?"
Right.
And then they're like, "Oh shit, I never thought of that." And then they crush up their pill. Buddy gives them a rig,
so it lasts longer. Or
yeah,
it hits harder.
Yeah, both.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
you could do half a pill instead of a whole pill.
Right.
And then hit you harder with just that half.
Definitely would hit you harder, yeah.
Twice as long.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And then this is how some
people... Brett Favre got addicted to painkillers.
What's that?
Brett Favre.
I don't know.
He's he's like a Hall of Fame quarterback in the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
He's retired, but for a while he was like, he was injured and they give him painkillers all the time. And he goes, hey, I'm addicted to this. I need to stop playing, go to rehab for a minute.
Right.
People are like, what? He's like, they made me take them.
Yeah.
And now I feel like I'm hooked. I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah, totally.
People like didn't know how to handle it.
Sure. Yeah. That's crazy. That amount of judgment is fucking just blows my mind.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, you have to be okay. Like, you can't not be okay. What the hell?
Yeah.
You're like in a super high intensity sport like that, and you get injured, and you're just supposed to expect to, like, Superman your way through it with, like...
Yeah, they all take painkillers. The painkillers are addictive.
Yeah.
And he got addicted to an addictive thing that they made him take. Then it's like, what do you think's going to happen?
Yeah.
Probably more are that. So... They tell you what they're taking. I found this from a guy. A lot of times, do they even know what they're taking? Or they're just like...
It's kind of a grab bag. It's a bit of a guesswork. You can tell from... Generally, they know.
Okay.
But they don't know the quality. That's the number one big thing. They're like, fuck, I don't know. Like, oftentimes, they'll joke. They're like, heroin? Like,
right.
Maybe? And so, you know...
Funny.
I mean, that's the thing that happened recently when there was like... I think it was 30 ODs in 2 days.
Yeah.
And because there was, and what it was is
30.
People thought it was heroin, but it was a powdered fentanyl that was going around, and it was hitting people really, really hard. So you don't really know what you have, and you don't know what it's been cut with or stepped on with. And
Golly, you don't even know what you're taking.
Yeah, I mean, people talk about like pig dewormer and shit, like crazy fucked up shit. I mean, crystal is already like really fucking bad for you.
Crystal's one of the big two to me.
Yeah,
you got heroin and meth.
Well, if you think about
like the biggies,
it's like starts eroding the central nervous system, like this shit that wraps around your spine that goes all the way up to the base of your skull.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In your brain. And so it's like, it's just slowly like corroding that and eating away at that and misfiring and fucking whatever else. Eventually it's just not good for you.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. What do they make the shit in, like a bathtub with a bunch of fucking chemicals? That's fucking insane.
It's not like a brand new bathtub.
Yeah.
You know, in an environment with no. So I come in, I have something. I'm like, I think it's heroin. That's the most or no?
What?
Heroin?
Coke, crystal, coke. And those are the three.
Okay.
Coke, crystal, and heroin.
So, like, I'm going to come in, I'm going to do some crystal meth, some heroin. You set me up with a booth.
Yeah.
And you give them a booth.
Yeah.
And then
there,
you just have people walking up and down the hallways, like looking, making sure they're not like shaking or anything. Or what do you?
We have a good view of the room.
Okay.
We also have a nurse's station.
They have actual nurses.
We have two VCH nurses.
What's VCH?
Vancouver Coastal Health.
Okay.
And they're there the whole time that we're there. And we also have a treatment room. And then they're sort of like, it's even the, like it's raised.
Yeah.
So they're sort of looking across the whole room constantly.
Yeah.
So we have like a pretty, and then the mirrors, because the way that the mirrors are positioned, we can see sort of in front of them.
Somebody's foaming.
Yeah. So we have like.
So what do you do when someone is, or how do you tell when someone is going, like going down a bad road? Someone's ODing.
Like heavy nods. You know what I mean? Like when. When you've done a lot of heroin, you'll start like, looks like falling asleep.
Yeah.
Right? So they get on a heavy nod and then they'll start, their head will drop forward.
Isn't that always the experience though?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. We have to really be on it. We have to be dialoguing with them, physical point of contact, like touching their shoulders and being
Man, how you feeling?
Yeah, how you doing? You okay?
Yeah. But you also don't want to fuck up their trip or they won't come back. Right?
No, they'll come back.
They will, no matter, because it's safe.
Yeah. They really, really appreciate the service. And it's, for a lot of them, it's like the first time that they've walked into a building and someone isn't like, get out of here, you junky piece of shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that must be nice just to have that.
Exactly.
Like the greeting.
Yeah. The greeting at the front door is probably like the number one reason why people like come back. I wouldn't say it's
getting treated like
one,
a human.
Yeah.
For once.
Yeah.
Yeah, every once in a while I'll see it like a 7-Eleven, you know, when there's like a bum or a drunk or whatever. And they're like, hey man, can you get us a quarter? And the guy behind the counter's like, get out of here, what did I tell you?
Yeah.
But every once in a while I'll see like, hey man, I thought we talked about this. Like, you can't come in here because it's like making the customers uncomfortable.
Right.
You just can't do that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, way to go. We're treating them like a fucking person.
Totally.
Instead of chasing him out with a broom.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
I mean, the other bit is like, why are people chasing them out with a broom? Because they're stealing their products,
right? That's, you know what I mean? There's like they're being forced into that. It's not just the look of them.
Yeah, but I mean, it starts to feel like a neo caste system where it's like, you know, these people are a fucking disgrace, and like
it's easy to say these people. Those people are doing that, and you're like, totally. that's our friends and neighbors and brothers and sisters.
Yep, someone's kid, someone's cousin.
That ain't these people. They didn't grow up in another place.
Yep,
someone just gave them the drug in the vulnerable time in their life, and just shit happens.
Yep,
or you're Brett Favre, you're all that card, and you just don't have the courage to go, I'm going to go to the media and say I'm addicted to this.
Yep. Well, then Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Prime example.
Yeah. He was revered, and then he was one of these people.
Yep.
You think his problem, the reason he died, I've heard this theory, was that not that he got something way purer than he thought it was, because he hadn't done it in so long, he thought his tolerance was where it was when he left off. And his tolerance over there had gone way down.
Yep. That happens with people when they come back from prison. They look all great. They've been like working out, getting square meals, roof over their head. I mean, majority of our community is homeless. So that's like a big point of care for us. It's like trying to get them housed, because that's the number one way that you can feel like a human,
like a human again, like a part of society in some way.
You, chances are you won't be self-medicating as much as if you got like a nice, clean, like dignified place to.
Dude, if I'm living on the street, what's the fuck's the difference? How's this gonna fuck me up?
Let me tell you something. If I was fucking homeless, like in a very cold city
all day, every day, time, I better be fucked.
And I fucking stank, and I didn't have like a nice shower and, you know, clean clothes and the whole bit, I would probably be taking some substance or another.
You'd have to convince me of a reason why I should not take this.
Do you know what a lot of people say that when I ask them what does it feel like to do heroin, they say it feels like a warm hug.
Wow.
So that
you ever see Trainspotting?
Yeah.
Is it like that? Do they get it right?
I don't know. I like that movie a lot. Requiem for a Dream was another good one that I feel like was pretty on point.
You feel like that got it right? I got to see that. Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah, really good.
Okay, so getting back to this. So then they see them nodding off.
Yeah.
And then the nurse will go over and check on them. And then what? How do they save them from ODing?
Well, there's a few different things. We'll put like cold cloths on their necks. Sometimes we'll give them like a little falcon grip.
Uh-huh.
And it's sort of like to pinch a little bit of like pain so they sort of snap into their body again.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or we'll try to just converse with them, like keep them sort of alert, you know? They're in sort of like a state of shock in a way. You know what
I mean?
And
you're trying to bring them out of the shock?
Yeah, a little bit.
So is it like ODing on one of those drugs? Is it kind of like in the movies when you get cold and you're out and they're like, don't fall asleep, because then you'll die?
Right.
Is it like that? If they fall asleep too much, then they OD?
Yeah.
So as long as you stay... Oh, I just thought it was a chemical thing that you needed an antidote. You needed something in your body, that chalk stuff they give you or whatever it is, the coal.
Oh, no. I mean, we do... Like, if a person is actually in an OD state, what we do is we take them out of their chair if they haven't already fallen off of it, and we lay them on their back on the ground, and then the nurses will bring over, we have oxygen, and then we have a crash kit, and so we bring over oxygen, put oxygen on them, and we're gonna open their airway and then pump them full of oxygen, and then
to make sure they don't stop breathing,
right?
So force them to breathe.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then
okay,
if they you know, we monitor their heart rate, their beats per minute, and their oxygen level in their blood. And then if they start falling too deep, like we realize that they're in the full state of, then we'll give them something called Narcan.
What's that?
It would be like the same way if you've ever seen anyone who has to take their insulin.
Mm-hmm.
They like squeeze the fat on their stomach and then...
My friend Rick does that.
Yeah. Who?
My friend Rick, he's at 22, he got childhood diabetes.
Ah, shit.
Like, it just developed, and his doctors didn't know what it was. They started, like, prescribing all these other things. Yeah. So, like, you can't develop childhood diabetes, type 1 diabetes, at 22.
Yeah.
It's like 16 is the latest that can happen.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but now he has to fucking hold the fucking belly fat and shoot him up, and now his skin is all hard there.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we do. We give them a little shot of Narcan, and then that usually, what it does is it sort of reverses the effects of the drugs, like the brain receptors. There's like some sort of like block there, and then it actually starts to reverse that. So then they will. Have you ever seen what's that movie with John Goodman where he's and Nicolas Cage where they're ambulance drivers? Have you ever seen that?
Oh yeah, it was an Oliver Stone movie or something. Yeah. Night Shift.
Waking the Dead.
Waking Dead.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyways, there's this scene in it where they're using Narcan, but they act like they're just raising someone from the dead, and so
because they feel powerful.
Yeah, they're just sort of putting these people on, and so they're like, you know, doing this whole like ritual around it. And then all of a sudden the person's like, and they come back too, and then everyone thinks that they're like some sort of gurus or shamans or something, you know, witch doctors.
I did that once in Israel. I had somebody hide behind a bush, and I had all my friends down that way.
Yeah.
And so like they was hiding behind a bush here, so my friends couldn't see them. And I sprayed bug spray off all over my pants.
Yeah,
you know, like Lysol, whatever. And then I walked by the bush and I was like, hey guys, how you doing? As I walked by, and they just took a lighter and they just lit my pants, one of those long lighters, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And my pants just exploded in fire.
Holy shit.
And they were like, what the fuck? And they just saw me break out in fire out of nowhere. I was like, and I started like rolling. It goes out pretty fast if you roll.
Yeah.
But like, I just love fucking with people. And they're like, I saw you just burst into flames. Yeah. There was nothing happened.
Yeah.
So then they'll take the Narcan. And then they'll slowly come back. Will they have that moment like, will they do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes like we have to give them a couple shots depending on how much they've done. But yeah, they'll come to, and then they have all sorts of different kinds of reactions.
Like what?
Sometimes they're, you know, they burst into tears. Sometimes they're super confused about where the hell they are and what happened to them. So, you know, we just say like, hey, you know, you're at Insight, you're safe. Like,
oh, right.
You know, you just had an OD. And blah, blah. And, you know, so for some people, it's like a big life-changing happening.
Is it a bottom for people?
I don't know that it is.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it can be for some people. It's like super scary.
Yeah.
And I don't know all the things that happen to a person when they feel like they were dead or could have died if they weren't there.
Yeah, do they see the light? Do they come back and talk about that at all?
Yeah, some people talk about it, and then other people have said that they figure that it's just the lights in the ceiling of the ambulance that they're seeing. But who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we get all sorts of different reactions because it's dramatic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Do they ever try to fight you?
Yeah.
They do come out and just like...
Or demand their $10 back, because it usually costs about $10 for a flap.
What's a flap?
Like a point of heroin or crystal or whatever. It's about $10.
Oh, they demand it back from you.
Yeah. Because basically
flap. That's what it's called? A flap?
We just robbed them of...
Bullshit, man. I was having a good time. Yeah. You owe me $10. Yeah. It's like if you knock their food off their tray, then it's like, well, I was going to eat that, bro.
Totally.
Like it's poisoned. It wasn't poisoned. It was food. You owe me $10.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. They get mad. And do they swing at you? Have you ever been swung on there?
Yeah, I mean, mildly, it's
but they're weak.
Yeah, nothing I'm too worried about.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be my fear, too.
There's a fear of getting a needle, like stuck with needles.
By accident?
Yeah. It does happen. It's one of the parts of the job that makes it a little bit like, you know.
Has anybody that you know or heard of at Insight gotten something from?
No, what happens if you get poked...
I've seen Walking Dead. You just chop the hand off, right? As soon as possible. Right. Before yeah.
With a machete.
Yeah.
Where's the machete?
Get his leg. He was poked.
No, you just go to... They'll just take you right over here to St. Paul's.
Yeah.
And then they put you on ARVs, and it just like flushes your whole system out. And
to help it not go in.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. There's been multiple times that people have been... You know, their accidents occur. It's bound to happen. And we're usually on it right away. And quick trip to the hospital. It's just another part of the job, really.
What are those chalk pills or those coal pills my friend told me about? He was coming off some pills. He was on, I don't know.
Cold effects?
Maybe, but it's like it just, when you're having withdrawal symptoms.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about something else.
Okay. It's like, it's not a drug. But he was having withdrawal symptoms coming off like Xanax or something. And then he's like, fuck, I'm addicted, because he started getting the shakes. He didn't realize he had addicted himself.
Right.
He's real like clear about it. He's a comic, and he's real like, I didn't realize I was addicted, but I guess I am. Like he wasn't fighting it. He was like, oh, really? You know? And so he's like, and I couldn't get to my dealer. He was in Canada, actually, and he had to go to pharmacy and get those things that like, I feel like it's chalk. Or coal or something, and it just clear
charcoal,
maybe charcoal. Yeah.
Charcoal's like,
but just
it's one of the most absorbent things. So
oh, maybe that's it.
Yeah, I don't know if that's what the. I don't know.
And it just like clears out your system, where it's like, cool, now I'm not addicted anymore.
Yeah, I guess I don't know, man.
All right, man. Do you? Are there regulars there that you get to know?
Oh yeah.
Are you friends with some of them?
Oh hell yeah! Honestly, I said earlier that it gets its hooks in you working down there. It's like one of the most hilarious and beautiful jobs like ever.
Really?
Yeah. Because you're dealing with people that in so many ways just don't fucking fit in.
Yeah.
In any form of society at all. And they're people that, you know, they're oftentimes stunted emotionally. They're not developed in the same way that, like, everyone else got their, like, chance to develop.
Yeah.
They come from poverty. They come from abuse. They come from trauma. They come from addiction. A lot of kids were born addicted. Their parents were doing drugs.
Oh, really? You know, and they were never not on drugs?
Yeah, there's no
Jesus.
There's no choice in that, you know. Like,
and you're talking about those people, yeah, like, yeah. Dude, come on.
Yeah, man. Some people just get a fucking bum deal. You know what I mean? They're born into really
people
really
don't want to accept that possibility. That I just got lucky.
Yeah.
That I wasn't born to a crack mom.
Totally. That's why people are throwing around this. You've probably heard it a fair amount now by this point. Like the idea of being like white and privileged. Like Louis C.K. He sort of coined that white people problems.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I mean that's happening more and more as people are like accepting things and dialoguing about things. It's like, we're starting to realize that we sort of, there's a certain amount of privilege that comes with just being white.
It's hard to realize that though, because you're like, because you are born with it, then you're like, you don't see it. There's no change. You don't become white.
Yeah.
You're just like, this is the reality.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's your reality and it tends to work in your favor in a lot of ways. I'm not saying that if you're white, you're exempt from fucking problems or issues that we all have to deal with.
Yeah.
It just, there's just a certain, Louis C.K. does an awesome bit on it about basically if you were born in any time, any era,
yeah,
and you're white, you're good. You know?
Yeah, almost, pretty yeah. much. Pretty much.
So you just try to be aware of it. You try to be as responsible as you can with it. And you realize, hopefully you start thinking in more compassionate terms about the fact that, like, everyone's got a story. Everyone comes from a place that might not be your experience of things. And so you have to just make a little room for that.
Yeah. So you're friendly with them?
I love those people. Like, yeah. I absolutely love them. And sometimes the worse, the better for me.
Why?
Just because I don't know. I just see something in them that I'm like, fuck, man. Like, you did not, no one fucking helped you. No one, like, your whole life's just been like one tragedy after the next. And I don't know, it does something to me. It just makes me be like, that's pretty fucking impressive that you're still around.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool to like start to have dialogue, regain that like a sense of dignity and then like camaraderie and then friendship. And,
It's
cool, man. I feel like really honored, really blessed to be down there, be working there. Like, I'm stoked about it.
Are they missing that in their lives? Any sort of camaraderie or friendship?
Yeah, because who they deal with every single, like, most of the people that are down there are like, I don't understand what it means to have friends because everyone fucking wants something from me.
Yeah.
And I'm a piece of shit. Like, they're very open and honest about the fact that they, you know, they're humble people. They're not, for the most part, they're not like, you know.
This is the right way to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They know what's going down.
Everyone should do this.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm living in the street.
Yeah.
I know most people don't live in the street. I would love to have a bed.
Yeah, no doubt.
God.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, Donovan P comes from fucking native mother who was like also an addict who just abandoned him. It's like, do your own fucking thing at like 10.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Man, you ain't got no chance.
Yeah. I don't know how Donovan isn't like the fucking, like, angriest fucking dude. You know what I mean? Like, cause I know how I am and I had it easy in a lot of ways. And so, and I still get righteously and royally fucking pissed off at like people's ignorance on some matters, you know?
He's super positive.
Yeah. He's cool about it.
He's a Jesus guy without Jesus.
Yeah, man.
You know?
Yeah. The best kind.
Yeah. You're like, I like your positive outlook, Jesus people, but don't fucking shove it down my throat so much.
No doubt.
You act like you're better than me when you're doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus people without the Jesus are perfect. What do you guys do for lunch? You know, or like, do you have, breaks, right? You can't work 11 straight hours.
Yeah, we have breaks. The food in that general area at that time of night is not great.
Nothing in Gastown?
Not super late.
Oh, yeah, no. So what do you do?
there's, I mean, if you get an earlier break, you're lucky, then you get to go to one of the local restaurants or pubs. But, well, we usually pack our own lunches.
Do you eat with each other?
No, nope, we all have separate breaks.
You just take your time. Yep. Oh, separate break, because they can't afford to lose a couple people at once.
Yeah.
How many people on duty at once?
Well, there's 5 PHS staff.
That's you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then there's 2 VCH nurses.
Okay.
And then there's...
What's PCH?
No, VCH.
VCH. No, no, no. What you are?
PHS.
That's PHS. What is PHS?
Portland Hotel Society.
Okay, okay.
That's who ultimately employs us. And then there's peer staff. And they work in what we call the chill out lounge.
Yeah.
So there's like
first of all, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's still
I'd love to hang out there.
it's what people when they're finished in the injection room, then we want to make sure we still keep an eye on them. So they
they're not going up and down in waves.
Yeah, or you never know. Like the effects of the drugs can sort of kick in. The intensity of it can kick in a little later on.
Yeah, that's how mushrooms are. They go in waves.
Yeah.
So people be like, okay, I'm coming down now. Like, you ain't coming down. You're just coming down for a minute.
Right.
Handle your shit. Get a piece of paper or whatever you need because you're going back in.
Yeah, so it's just an area where we can sort of still keep an eye on them. They can get a juice and a coffee and chill out. A lot of them just like lay on the ground, take 5. You know what I mean?
Really?
Yeah.
The chill out lounge.
Mm-hmm. So the there's 2 people that work that room.
Yeah.
And they're people that have addictions of their own, but they're trying to, well, they're able to be employed there.
It's like, okay.
Yeah.
You ever see The Wire?
I haven't. I've been told many, many times that I have to see that. And yeah, I really want to see it.
They do street drugs pretty well.
Yeah.
And they don't seem to glorify it at all.
Yeah.
But it's based on this 6-episode series called The Corner. And it's written by the same guy, I think directed by the same guy, but it looks like a play almost. They do like real long form shots and stuff.
Yeah.
But there's some heroin user or whatever drug it is. And he has to go to the hospital and the doctor's like, look, you're done. If you take this again, you're going to die. There's no way around it.
Yeah.
And he's okay. And his friends, which may not be true, but his friends come and see him and they're like, hey, you ready? We got some for you.
Yeah.
And then his other friend who's like trying to figure out what to do. He's like, did you hear the doctor? Like, you can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
You know? And he's like, oh, man, there's only one way this ends. Like, it was never going to end any other way.
Yeah.
Like, all right, so I'm going to go. It's not like I'm going to get off it. But then that guy ended up, maybe in The Wire, ended up getting off to the point where he would, like, volunteer at, like, shelters or soup kitchens and stuff where it's, like, some way to be a part of, like, helping society.
Yeah, totally. That's the thing is, I don't know... Like, I tried to do similar work when I was in Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Is that where Portland Hotel Society comes from?
No, it just sort of happens out that way.
So you did similar work?
Yeah, I was working with communities that were interested in helping out homeless people. And so my friends and I did it, and we did it with different church organizations and different groups. And I kept trying to do it on my own. Because I really didn't like being a part of religious organizations.
Yeah.
I just felt they were way too agenda happy. And it was always about sort of pushing something. They were their own sort of drug pusher, you know? And so I just thought like, it's kind of a shame. Like, you know, what if a person doesn't really want to hear about that? Or like, do they have a choice? Or they have to hear the sermon? I'm not saying like sermons are evil, but they have to hear the sermon before you'll give them the food. Like, why can't you give them the food first?
Just show a good example.
Yeah, man.
Show a good Christian example. Exactly. Don't tell them. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like starting to get really worn out with that kind of thing. And
I have to hear the sermon.
I'm really, really grateful for this organization because there's no agenda there. What's that?
There's no Jesus. They're just trying to help people.
Yeah, man. And it's quite ironic because one of the things that we do is we give people foot baths.
Really?
And because a lot of people have trench feet because their feet have been like sopping wet for days, weeks, months.
What's trench feet?
Trench feet is something that you would get if you went to war and you're actually in the trenches and you're like, you know, your boots were all muddied and wet for, you
Three
know, they always
days.
Say like clean pair of socks, like every good soldier clean pair of socks every day, right? That's right. That's like their deal.
All right.
And yes,
what happens to your foot?
Trench foot is gnarly. Like, it's like, you know when you like lay in a bath for too long and you get super pruney, or in a hot tub? It's the same thing, but then they start getting like ulcers because their feet are starting to get soft. So then the calluses start to soften and all that, but they're still on their feet.
So it's still weighing down onto the softness instead of the hardness.
Yeah, and then they start getting like ulcers and then open sores, and then it just turns into, it's a nightmare. And it's very unclean, very unhygienic.
Right.
And so we do these Epsom salt little warm baths for their feet. And then I do my best to provide, and a lot of the staff tries to bring in socks for people so that they can have clean socks to wear.
So you don't go... When you're giving someone one of the saltwater foot, no part of you is like, ew, I don't want to touch your foot.
Well, yeah, it's gross. For yeah. Sure. It's totally gross and it stinks.
Oh.
Yeah, it's fucking nasty. But the fact that I can say that it's nasty and that it repulses me that much, like only, like my next instinct is compassion because like hell I would want that to fucking... be the case for me, right?
Wow.
So that's where I go with it. I'm just like, fuck that. I wouldn't want trench feet.
Oh, you're a good person, man. I was like, hey, wait, don't touch me. Whenever a homeless guy's like, when you give him a dollar and he's like, oh, thanks, man. He goes to shake your hand. Like, oh, come on. Don't that's make why, this part of it.
That's why we fist bump.
That's why I fist bump.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. Yeah.
I mean, I even go to shake people's hands downtown because I don't really care too much about that anymore.
Yeah.
And they're like, they will even give me the like, no,
you don't want.
Well, this fist bump. Yeah. You don't know where this hand's been.
Yeah. I had a football game with a piece of shit earlier. We don't. Like, you just, you don't want to touch this. I went for 6 catches for 85 yards. You don't want to. Are there people that, you lose not at Insight, but on the street that you've become accustomed to and start to like.
Mm-hmm.
How is that? What happens then? Not what happens, but like, how do you feel about it? How do you handle those?
Do you know, it feels like about every month or so, you'll walk into Insight and there's like another poster on the wall that's like, so-and-so has passed.
Oh, they put a poster up.
Yeah. And we have like little memorials for them and such. And, you know, most people, it's usually just us that comes out or like the few people that they know that in that community.
Uh-huh.
Family members are usually pretty few and far between because a lot of these people have been ostracized from family and this kind of thing. So, but yeah, we try to have a little memorial and make it special and tell a few stories about the person. But it's like, you know, it's a pretty common thing. Like you'll walk into work and there's another poster on the wall. It's another... the person who's passed, and that's the hard reality of doing hard drugs, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, there's going to be deaths, like it starts to wear your whole system down.
How is it for you, though? You walk in, you're in a good mood.
Yeah.
On Monday or whatever, you've just had a nice weekend, and you walk in, you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, that's pretty much it right there. I do my damnedest to create a space for it, and to take a little time and to like really understand it. But there's another piece of me that's like sort of in a, not to sound like cold or callous, but a little bit like the show must go on. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because that's just the reality. And so you really have to find a space in yourself to be okay with that, as hard as that is. And to just keep like, you know,
has it gotten easier when you see one of those things? From the first time you get to know somebody when they pass to now, when it's like, yeah, I've known this guy for 6 months and now he's gone. Has it gotten an easier process?
You know, actually, I was going to say no, it never gets easier, but in a way, kind of it does. And that's maybe like, it's kind of brutal hearing myself say that, but in a strange way, there might be some truth there.
It's experience, more experience you get. Yeah. When you remember the first time you got laid, you know, like, it's all I want to do. I will sacrifice my entire life for this.
Yeah.
But now you're like, all right, it's sex. My mom's in town. I can't do it this weekend.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But like, I mean, it comes sort of commonplace.
Whenever there's shows like Grey's Anatomy, any doctor shows where they like go nuts over losing a patient.
Yeah.
And it's like, would you still be going nuts after 20 years as an ER doctor?
Yeah.
Would it still really shake you up?
Yeah.
I don't think it would.
you remember, yeah, you're exactly right. You remember, like, I remember the first time I saw a dead body. Uh-huh. That fucking rocked me to my core.
Where was that?
That was at one of the low burial hotels. And, you know, because we'd have to do room checks. And you can't always, you know, we're not like Big Brother. We're not like in people's space or set up cameras in their rooms or anything. So they have their own life, their own agenda. They do their thing. And these people use drugs and you can't always keep an eye on them. And so, yeah, people pass. And
what happened when you saw it? Who was the person that you found? Or what was the deal?
I'm not going to say a name.
No, definitely don't say a name. Yeah.
But I just remember being like, wow, like, it just rocks you to your core. It's crazy, you know, like to...
What do they look like?
I guess it's a little bit like palliative care.
What's palliative care?
You know, like working in old folks' homes and things like that.
Oh, yeah, when they see them out, when they're like, they're going to lose.
You're right, yeah.
Oh, yeah, old folks' home must be the same thing.
Yeah.
Yet they're going to go.
Yeah.
You don't get better from being old.
Yeah, exactly.
Just get more sick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it like, what did his body look like? Were they just lying down, or what was it?
Yeah, it's like, you know, just like cold, like sort of, I don't know if, I don't remember much about it except for the sort of like the feeling, the strange feeling about it. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a really tricky thing to describe. There's like, you know, when you walk into a room and you sense that like something's different or something's mm-hmm. wrong. Or just
you can't
like
say why.
It's like an energetic chemical makeup that you can't explain. That's like something has changed.
And you could sense that immediately when you walked in.
Yeah, it slowly sinks in, and you're like, oh, fuck.
Right.
You know what's happened here.
And now you've seen plenty of dead bodies.
No, I haven't. I mean, I work at Insight. That's the like most beautiful thing about it.
Yeah.
You know?
No dead bodies.
Lots of ODs. No dead bodies.
God, that's amazing. In 10 years, none.
Yeah. Well, almost, I think it's 11 years now.
That's like, that's crazy.
Yeah. I know. It's like some sort of modern fucking miracle, but really what it is just science and the ability to see past like people's problems and just be like, oh, this is an illness.
The thing I got from Donovan that I never really thought of before was, or maybe it was my libertarian friend, but the idea that they're saying, we're going to make this illegal. You know, this drug or whatever. Like, we're decided as a society, we're like, we're going to make this illegal. Like, that doesn't make it go away.
Right.
Exactly. That just makes it go somewhat away.
Yeah.
But it's not gone now.
Yeah.
So then you can't just punish everybody. Like, see, we're punishing you. Do it. That means don't do it. It's like, they're still going to do it.
Yeah.
So, like, you need a place where it's like, just help me not die.
Yeah. It's like, it ends up looking like bad parenting.
Yeah.
All this government regulated shit. It's like, so you're like, you would be that rigid with your own kids knowing that like in their teenage years, they're going to do shit.
Yeah, you'd be that rigid.
Yeah.
You're like, nope, not allowed.
Not my kid. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, your kid just died.
It's allowed. If you do it, you'll be punished.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop them from doing it.
Right. It's like condoms and, you know, I mean, this kind of thing. It's like when there was that point in time when they wanted to put vending machines with condoms in them. Do you remember uh-huh. that?
Sort of.
It was that
they
idea.
They wanted to have them given out.
In schools, yeah. Because they're like, well, fuck. Like, kids are having sex.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Make it available. In New York, they have, at the bars, they have these NYC condoms.
Yeah.
They just have like a goldfish bowl full of condoms.
Right.
And
they're
on your way out, you know who you're leaving with.
Right, exactly.
Some girl you met, grab a few. But you feel free.
Totally.
And that doesn't make people have more sex.
Right.
It just makes people have sex with the condoms, without condoms less.
Seems logical to me.
Yeah, it doesn't go away. That's great. 11 years and no, that's like unbelievable.
Yeah, it is.
A drug that kills people on the reg.
Yeah, totally. No, it is. It's absolutely phenomenal. Like it's probably like an unprecedented kind of thing. I think it's like groundbreaking and history making and
all. Yeah, that. There's not much like that around the world, right?
Yeah.
They need stuff like that in America. Bad.
Yep.
Well, fuck. All right, man. I'm trying to think if there's anything I don't know about the place. What is there that you think people should know about that they don't know? Or that they have misconceptions?
Well, probably that we don't give out drugs.
Okay.
And that if a young child who's interested in, like if a teenager or a young adult is coming to Insight and they are like, hey, I really want to do heroin for my first time. We're not like, oh, there, yeah, go have a seat and go on in. Like, you know what I mean? A lot of people think, like, we've had people come from...
So what do you do with those people?
Well, we sit down and have, like, serious fucking conversation with them. And we try to really level with them, and we try to steer them in other avenues.
Are you like, can you look around you for a second?
Yeah, that's a big one.
And, like, this could easily be your future if you go down this road.
This is not like a fucking... You're not going to Playland for the day. This is a fucking real, like, real hardcore reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you do not want to fucking go here. Like, we're, you know, we'll say to, when we're doing intakes with people, we'll say, like, when you came in, exactly like you said, when you came in, did you have a look around? Did you see the type of people? Like, it does not get better for you. It gets worse. That's the reality.
Yeah.
But the beautiful part about Insight is that we have a treatment room right above. It's called Onsite. And so if someone's like, you know what, I'm fucking sick of this, it's I can't do this anymore, it's killing me, like,
go upstairs.
Yeah, go upstairs.
What's upstairs?
Oh, like one of the best treatment, like, detox places in, I think it's Canada, I'm not really sure.
That helps them get, first of all, Onsite is a great name when it's on Insight.
Yeah, totally.
that's great.
Yeah.
And they just help you and, like, try to get help you get clean and tell you what you need to do. They try to get you jobs and stuff, or, like...
Yeah, we do absolutely everything we can to get people hooked up with resources. Like, it's pretty incredible. Like, we do absolutely everything we can. Like, if someone comes to us and says, like, here's where I'm at, this is what my situation looks like, we're on it. Like, we're trying to direct them any other place that we can to try to make sure that their life is improving. You know what I mean? That they're... I don't think there's anything much quite like it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Have other governments come to, like, research what you guys do or to get a first-hand look?
Yeah, I think so. I think it used to happen a lot. I don't see it a lot because I work at night, and so usually that stuff happens in the daytime. They'll do, like, little tours and such. I mean, it's fascinating for the world. They would, like, really want to educate themselves and understand what does it look like and how does it work and... You know, what does it all mean? Yeah.
What hours is it closed? 4:30 to...
It's open from 10 a.m. to 4 in the morning.
Okay.
And it should be 24 hours, and there should be more of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would make for a...
That's the perfect place to put it.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of, like, its effect on the rest of society and the people, where the people who need it can get access to it. I mean, that's like... There are locations like that all over the place where it's like, this is the heroin place. This, you know, this is the drug place. Like, that's where you put those things.
Yeah. And for, like, religious communities that don't understand it, that just, like, demonize it, I would say that, you know, that old maxim, like, cleanliness is next to godliness.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what harm reduction is. It's just like we're trying to keep things as clean as possible.
Right.
You know, it's not like we're going around to schools being like, hey, kids should do drugs.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, people go crazy places with it. It's like...
But you get that reaction where people are like, you're making people do drugs.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Wow.
But it's getting better. Like, people are like, I've been really, really encouraged by this generation because they're, like, so fucking educated. And, like, you talk to any of them and they're like, oh, yeah, Insight, that's fucking awesome. Good for you guys.
It's amazing. Yeah, I love the idea of it.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm saying now in this generation too. More and more people, at least with weed, who do not do it, have never done it, maybe tried it once in college or don't ever do it, but it's like, yeah, you should be allowed.
Totally.
Who are, like, still able to separate themselves. Like, right. Yeah, do your thing. Yeah. I like whiskey.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, it's very, very encouraging. Like, constantly, like, if I'm sitting down for a drink somewhere or whatever, and people are like, oh, yeah, what do you do? And then I say that I work at Insight. And they're immediately like, right on. Good. That's great. Good for you.
Because they know how important it is.
Yeah, they're like, that's really important. It doesn't matter. I got in a motorbike accident recently, and I was at physio, you know?
Hmm.
Just went to my physiotherapist you know, get my arm working again and everything.
I thought that was a nightclub physio.
No. No, doing physiotherapy. And, you know, like, clinical, older chap, you know? And he was like, yeah, where do you work? And I told him about it. And I was thinking, oh, crap, here we go, right?
Yeah, because he's,
like,
older.
Yeah. And he was just like, that's fucking great, you know, in not so many words. But yeah, he was like, that's really, really awesome. That's needed. It's totally appropriate. It's, like, scientifically based. it just makes sense. He's like, it's a logical fucking thing.
Scientifically based.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Fuck yeah, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Do you want to tell your name on this or not?
Yeah, sure. I'm Morgan Black.
Okay. Yeah. Some people are like, I don't, leave me out of it.
No, I don't care.
I'll just get you the information. Morgan Block?
Black.
Black.
Yeah.
Like the color that you're not?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a Twitter address or anything? Or,
no.
Or email? Or not email. Or, I mean, a website? You don't have any of that?
No.
Where can people go? I mean, do people donate money to Insight? Or how is it funded?
I think it's provincially funded.
Okay.
Yeah. But, I don't think we have anything like that. I mean, if you want, you could come down to Insight and give me socks.
Socks.
Yeah, and I will will gladly and happily give those out to people. That's like the.
How do you get socks now? You guys pay for them?
I pay for them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people donate them, and other, you know, my boss, he always buys socks from Army and Navy to give out and stuff like that.
Just
so,
bulk.
Yeah.
139 East Hastings Street.
Yep.
Can people mail stuff there?
I think so, yeah.
People want to mail socks there? Could they do that?
I guess so.
Fuck.
That'd be wicked.
Yeah, that wouldn't cost very much.
No.
And you know it would go to someone who needs socks.
Dude, it's crazy. It's like I've had people like teary-eyed just from giving them a fucking pair of socks.
Really?
Yeah. Like you'd think you're giving them like, God, I don't know what. It's pretty fucking amazing. And they're like... It's a currency. I say that kindness is currency because it's like down there, it really fucking means something, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So money, whatever, it's like feeding the addiction, whatever. They know that's just part of what their disease, their illness sort of entails, you know? But like to give someone like a nice, fresh, clean pair of socks is like it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And they're never like, oh, it's not my style. I like the kind with the rings on the top. No, thanks. They never get like that. Black? What am I, 90? I don't wear black socks. Give me some fucking colorful ones.
Yeah. Are these Argyle? No.
Argyle. Argyle is the most like rich person sock there is. Like, totally. I have privilege. And that's why I wear these diamonds on my sock. 139 East Hastings Street, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and then some numbers in there. I don't know. You guys have weird zip codes. You have numbers and letters, huh?
Yeah.
All right, Morgan Black, excuse me. thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. It was cool.
I hope it's been informative. I'm not a very educated individual, so.
No, what I get in this podcast usually is like, I don't need someone who's done research on it. I need someone who's lived the thing.
Yeah.
So like I interviewed my friend about being a father.
Yeah.
And it was like, he hasn't read all the books that you're supposed to, but it's like, just tell me, do you love one more than the other sometimes? Right. I really want to know that. And he's like, yes.
Yes,
like, we're really going to talk. Yes. There's sometimes one thing an asshole and the other's not. Of course you're going to like one more than the other.
For sure.
Yeah, that's all I want. First-hand accounts of like, you know, shit like that. That was perfect.
Cool.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, man.
I got my socks on, I got my socks on, I got my all-got socks on, I got my socks on, I got my socks on, I got my all-got socks on.
Well, there's the episode, you guys. 197 in the books. Injection protection. Let me tell you a quick story, you guys. Thank you, Morgan Black, for doing it. I wouldn't have thought a lot of that. I wouldn't have realized about the no sex drive. That surprised me. I would have thought more. But yeah, you're right. Why have sex drive when you have heroin drive? Does this sound... I was listening for a teaser. I was listening to this episode for a teaser in the beginning. Does this sound like I'm... Sometimes when people are talking, I act like I already know that? Like if they're like... you know, when I was seven in my town, we used to like kill one of the other 7 year olds. All 100 of us would have to choose straws. We'd have to choose one other 7 year old to die. And I'm like, oh right, because you do it by chance, so that way it wasn't about class or anything. Like when I say it like that, that's just me. Like it's almost like a question. That's how I mean it, but I feel like it comes off like I'm like, yeah, I already know that, but I don't know it. That's why I'm interviewing him in the first place, I guess. Danish and O'Neill podcast, episode 200, coming the first week of the new year. So anyway, let me tell you a quick story. I was in London, as I said, and I was taking a car service home.
They gave me a car service. And I was wondering how much I had to tip. Insert Jew jokes here. So at first I thought, you know, first of all, people should pay for that. If they're going to pay for a car service, or if they're gonna, anybody's going to pay for a flight, you pay for the bags also. You don't just pay for the flight and then say, well, the airline just didn't used to charge bags. Now they charge the bags. Like, yeah. And that means when you pay for the flight, that's now part of the flight. If you buy somebody dinner, you got to pay the tip. God, that's just sounds, that sounded, the way I went up with tip, it sounded so, so Jewy. Pay for the tip? Oh. But anyway, so I always thought they should pay the tip for the car service too, because that's really how much it costs. Anyway, so I don't know how much a tip. It was like 10 bucks, 20? I have no idea. So this guy who's, I just wanted to like go to sleep. I was tired. But this guy starts talking to me. He's like, oh, this guy blocked me in. He didn't know how to drive. He's like, yeah, I commiserated with him. He's right. Let's connect, you and I. Driver, let's connect. So, and then we're driving through the streets, and he starts telling me like, oh, you know why I love this neighborhood? Because of this. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm trying to ignore him. And then he was like, you know, this building is where Margaret Thatcher died. And I was like, oh, really? She goes, yeah, it was a hotel. You wouldn't have think someone would die in a hotel. But interestingly enough, and when you have enough money, you instead of going into a nursing home, you go to a hotel where you have maids just coming and you can get food sent up at any time. And doctors can come up there and get let in. And then eventually I was like, oh, yeah, that's a good point. And I was like, eventually I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's commit to this guy being my goddamn driving tour guide of London, telling about the there's no signs out, no billboards, how tall the buildings are, how they put scaffolding up, whether they clean them up, whatever. And I was like, all right, you know what? Fuck it. This guy's earned this tip. I had all this change in my pocket that I was going to save for the airport to buy some food and whatever was left over. But their change is not change. Their change is like dollars and $2 is. And their dollar is worth like $1.65 of our dollars. Is that right? No, more than that. More than that. Gotta be honest, I don't know anymore. So I had $7-$8 in there. And, you know, that's worth like 12, 13. And I was like, at the end of the ride, I was like, I'll just give him this. It's like 12 or 13 American dollars. That's about right for this ride as a tip. He's getting paid. Right? I don't know. So I was like, should I just give him like a 20? But that's like $30, $35. I give somebody $35 as a tip? No way. That's way too much. That's way too much. So anyway, I was like, I didn't know what to do. So I was like, I'll give him this change. It's worth like 12, 13 bucks. That's okay. That's good. And I was like, all right, thanks, man. It was nice talking to you. He was like, nice talking to you too. As he got my bags out of the back. And I was like falling asleep the whole way. But no, I was kept up. It was okay. It was a fun conversation. It wasn't a chore. And I gave him all this 8.50 in pounds. 8 pence. No. 8 quid, 50 pence. I don't think that's the way you say it, but whatever. And he goes, oh, yeah, cool. I'll buy some coffee with that. And I don't know if he meant it as an insult. Like, oh, thanks. You've given me enough for a cup of coffee. Or as like, cool, I got to go home now. I'll get some coffee for the way. Thank you. Because also, they don't have tipping that much in England. Is that correct, English people? Is that a correct assumption? They do have it in Canada, but they do not have it in London. And it's because, yeah, the cab drivers don't expect tips. Yeah. That's what I was thinking too. The cab drivers don't expect tips. That's what it was. But I was like, you know what? This guy is fucking being cool to me. Yes, that's what it is. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to give him this $8. That's $12 worth. I'm just going to give it to him. Fuck it. Instead of buying something, they got me a first class ticket. Fuck it. Every once in a while, you score those first class tickets, bro. Fucking sweet. I sat upstairs in a plane. Sometimes they have upstairs. It's the same level of eliteness as the downstairs first class, but like you feel superior. And like, you're the only one those waiters are waiting on.
Mm-hmm. That's right, waiters. I refuse to give them their real annotation.
So anyway, so I gave him the $7 when he landed. He goes, it's good enough for some coffee. So now I realize, oh, he just meant it as, hey, thanks, man. I'll get some coffee there. Really appreciate that. Like when Carlin gave me $20 once. George Carlin played the Comedy Store, did a month in July one time. Did a month at the Comedy Store. Every Thursday, Friday, Saturday. He might have done two shows on Saturday. Yeah, I think it was four shows a week. And I worked the door a lot. And one time I had to go to Canner's Deli to get him some deli. And the Comedy Store paid for it. They weren't as ridiculous back then as they are now. No, that, I mean, sometimes I think some of the people who are in charge now, they make him pay for it. They kind of take it out of his pay. But I went and got it. And then I brought it to him. And he was like, here, he gave me a 20. I was like, oh, no, sir. And he was always like, don't call me sir. You can call me George. Don't call me Mr. Carlin. He was all real normal, that guy. Real normal. Still held on to his like normal side of him. Like of the people kind of vibe. And I was like, no, they paid for it. He goes, yeah, I know they paid for it. That's for you. And I was like, man, I'm telling you, $20 to me as a door guy was, first of all, it was as much as I was making for the shift. And it was tax-free. So I was like, dude, you just made my day. I was like, wow. Killing it with a 20. I can't. I mean, I still remember the tip. Maybe it's because it's George Carlin, but I still remember it. I mean, it made a world of difference to a poor guy like that. But so anyway, maybe it took a look like that. Like, I don't have to, but hey, thanks, man. That's cool of you. This guy gave me a grand once a couple years later, taking my dick out on stage. This dude had already seen me take my dick out the night before because Don Barris was messing with me on stage, and we're probably doing a Q&A. And the guy had seen it. He was some magazine mogul, wanted to be part of the action. And Don was like, come on, show your Jew balls. I was like, no, Don, I can't do that. But just, yeah, I was going to do it. I was just kind of like playing like, oh, I mean, you know, that's not really cool, man. You can't really do it. It's a stage. And the guy, he goes, I'll give you, oh, Don started asking for money from the crowd. He's like, well, who will pay to see the Jew balls? And one guy offers 65 cents. Some Mexican guy in the ride, he goes, I'll give you 65 cents. I was like, no, that's not nearly enough. And the other guy goes, I'll give you $1,000. And he had just bought the house around the night before of champagne. He bought everyone a bottle of champagne, which is like maybe per table. But like that's another level of – I mean, this guy had money. He wasn't trying to be an asshole about it. He just had money. So I was like, oh, for that – oh, okay. Well, let's do it. And it was so cool. He just wanted to play along. And so Don started saying, come on, for $1,000. I was like, oh, I don't know. I was like, okay, fine. I'll do it. And I took him out and played with him, did little games with him. We have fun little races up the. We do a lot of stuff. We have fun late at night at the Comedy Store after midnight. So then the guy pulled out 10 $100 bills and gave it to me. And I was like, yeah. And I was standing outside as we were done. You know, Don was like, Ari, you should fare everybody. I was like, thank you. And I just stood on stage. And he was like, Ari. And I was like, thank you. And then he was like, Ari, all right, that's it. You're done. What are you waiting for? And I was like, I'm waiting for my money. And Don's like, no, man. Come on. You're not trying that, you Jew. He already gave you the $1,000. I'm like, no, man. I know I got $1,000. I would think I was also promised a 65 cents. There's that matter still to clear up. A grand, man. Jesus, that was great. So anyway, regardless. So I was going to feel bad. I did feel bad because I thought I'd stiff this guy. I thought I'd stiff this guy in England. The way he said, like, I'll get some coffee. I misread it. And I thought I'd stiffed him. And I was like, maybe I should have given him just a full 10. Because, oh, here's why I don't want to break a 10. Because when you come back, I can't give a change into my bank. They won't accept change. So I'm going to take bills. So I wanted to just give him all the fucking change that I can't use. But I thought I had stiffed him with his reaction. And I was like, oh. Because it was like a 35-minute ride. 40-minute ride. Yeah, 40 or 45 minutes. So maybe 20. If I was in America, I'd tip 20. So I was tipping 14. But you're not supposed to tip. You know, you see it. So I was thinking I had stiffed him. And I just was feeling sort of bad. You know, flying home. It wasn't hanging over my head. I was still having fun. I saw Let's Be Cops. Pretty good movie. The Kingsman actually is pretty good. So it was holding up my, it was hanging over my head like, I fucked that guy over. He was nice. He took me on a tour of London. It became kind of pleasant telling me all this stuff. We talked about it. He told me about Fuller's beer. It's the beer of London. And then they had that in the first class lounge. They gave me first class lounge. You get a bunch of food and wine and beer. And he goes, oh, next time you're in London, you got to have a Fuller's. I'm like, you know, maybe I'll try it at the airport. I thought I was going to go to the airport bar. First class lounge, brah. So, oh, this is getting an under the wire of missing my deadline. What are we at right now? Yeah, battery use. 108. Oh, I got an hour and 52 minutes. So they had the Fullers at the first class lounge. Had two of those. They were pretty good. Pretty good. But I felt bad. Told him about this tip. I felt bad that I stiffed him. But let it be said that I did not stiff him, but I felt like I did. And that's good enough for the purposes of this. So then I'm going home in to New York, to my place in New York. And I'm getting the subway back, and I had to take a cab to where I was going, to the stand. I got home. It was like late. By the time my bag came out, it was super late. So I had to come home, drop my shit off, wash my face, and then jump in a cab and go. I didn't have enough time to walk. It's a 20-minute walk. Didn't have enough time to make it. Cab driver dropped me off, and it was like 7, maybe 7:50. And I could just give him 9. But I was feeling bad from before. I was like, you know what? Yeah, let's say it was 7:50. I was like, 10, keep the change. He's like, oh, cool, thanks, man. And here's the reason I bring it up. The feeling I got when he was like, oh, cool, thanks, man. Like when he was like genuinely happy about it and a cool guy about it. It filled me not with joy, but with a lack of the negative feeling that I had when I had thought I'd stiff the English car driver. You know? Just the feeling that, oh, maybe I should have was worse, was a higher negative than the positive was of tipping this guy the right amount or a good amount. So here's the reason I say all that. You got the feeling the same thing I did, same way I did. When that guy said, we just need socks, you got that same feeling of, oh, I should buy these people socks. You're going to feel bad if you don't do it. For the $5 or $7 it's going to cost you to go to my Amazon link right now, arithegreat.com, and click on the Amazon link, or amazon.ca if you're in Canada. It's right; they're both right on there. You're going to feel bad about not doing it. It's Christmas coming up. And when Christmas does come, and you're going to remember that feeling where you're supposed to hold the door over people and be like, oh, Merry Christmas, and get that good feeling. And you have that thing of like, man, this guy told his story about how these are real humans. These aren't junkies. These are real human beings. And they just need some socks because their feet are rotting away. And all they want is socks. I'll tell you this right now. I gave him $50 for the podcast. I gave him $50. $60 because Canadian. I figured with the exchange rate, I was like, fuck it. Also, I didn't have a 10, so why not round up? And he goes, oh, cool. I'm like, he goes, no, you don't have to do that. And I'm like, no, it's for you. I'd pay for everybody. And he goes, oh, I'll use his money for socks. I'm like, man, that's what you're putting your money to? Not for burgers and hanging out? This is a good man. He's going to spend that money on socks. So when you're holding that door open for somebody and you're getting into that Christmas spirit, that holiday spirit, and it happens, you all get nicer, you feel more camaraderie and brotherhood. You feel brotherhood and family. And you're going to remember about those guys that really needed just a pair of socks. It's going to be a negative feeling because you procrastinated and didn't do it. If you do it, not only will you be robbed of that negative feeling, you won't have to feel negative in that moment. You will feel positive. You'll remember and go, oh yeah, I sent those guys socks. And you're going to think about somebody in a really bad state, just down on his luck. And the feeling of getting new socks, bro. I like new socks when it's like anytime. If I get off a plane and let's say I packed a second pair of socks in my carry-on bag and I'll like put them on. If I land at like 3:30 p.m. and I put them on, I change the socks. I'm like, oh, it feels wonderful. That was a tip I got from somebody on sets early on in commercials. One of the crew guys. He was like, secret to long shoots, second pair of socks. Fresh pair of socks will change your life. And that's not when your feet are rotting away. So go to Amazon right now. You can go to my website. I'm going to leave the address up on my website for Insight. You can send the socks there. Why not do it? They can't get too many. They can't have too many socks. They'll just put them in the lockers. It's going to directly go onto the feet of one of these guys that this guy has to deal with, that Morgan Black has to deal with. Fuck, I'm doing it right now. All right, you guys, I'm doing it right now. That's the episode. Don't forget Montreal on Thursday, the 18th. San Francisco, the 7th through the 9th, or the 6th through the 9th, or the 7th through the 10th. And I have a storyteller show in LA for Riot Fest, January 17th, and my special, January 16th at 11:59 p.m. Paid regular. Followed by on the 22nd, or the 21st, but at night, the 22nd morning at 12:30, my storyteller show, This Is Not Happening, premieres. First episode, me, Bobby Lee, Keegan-Michael Key. Doing tales about drugs. On after midnight. After at midnight. All right, you guys. Thank you very much for tuning in. For Morgan Black, I'm Ari Shaffir. This has been Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, episode 197. Injection protection with Morgan Black. Goodbye.
friend. Call me when you need a friend.